is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. McCoy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome in. We are live from One Bills Drive. The team is down in Philadelphia. My name is Donald Jones. I'm filling in for Murph. I'm here with the famous Jeremy White. Maybe you've heard of him. I think he's on in the morning with Howard.
Yes.
Jeremy, how you doing?
Doing good.
You ready? It's game day.
It is game day. Game two.
Game two. It's a big game for a lot of guys. I was talking to Ruben about this yesterday. I think it's a huge game for the backup quarterback, Nathan Peterman.
Him above maybe all others, or at least for the fans, right? He's the guy we all want to see.
You think he's feeling pressure?
I was thinking about this about Mitch Trubisky. Like, he went out and played so well in the opener, and even Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, those guys that show up and play well in their first game already kind of set a high bar, even though it's only the preseason.
Yeah.
Like, you set that high bar right away.
Yeah.
And sure, a little bit of pressure.
I think he kind of set a higher bar for himself, you know, because coming in, people were like, I want to see what this guy does. Then he comes out and has a somewhat good game and has had a good camp. And now people are like, wow, because, you know, now they move him up to number two. Is he truly the number two? Can he push and be the number two? And what do you do with TJ Yates? There's a lot of questions. I'm sure he's probably feeling a little bit of pressure, but he's back in Pennsylvania where he's played, you know, not in that stadium, but, you know, I'm sure it feels like a little bit of home.
It's one thing I wonder about is whether or not a coaching staff is willing to make a rookie your backup. A lot of times teams go for veteran backups, and TJ Yates was brought on board to be a veteran backup. And if he gets passed right away, is Peterman just – you're number two right out of the gate.
You're number two. That is a big question. We're going to talk about that some more later on in the show. Murph is down in Philadelphia with the team. The team is down in Philadelphia. They play the Eagles tonight in Philadelphia at 7 p.m. We are going to go out to Murph. Murph, how you doing?
Hey, Donald. Hello, Jeremy. How are you guys? Welcome. It's a beautiful day here in Philadelphia. Temperature about 80 degrees. Perfect sunshine overhead. Going to be a great night for football here.
You know, first of all, for the viewers on our MSG side, Murph, you are standing. You have a beautiful background behind you. Let us know where you are and what that is behind you.
This is downtown Philadelphia, Center City, Philadelphia, in fact, I call it. We are on the Hilton Hotel at Penn's Landing. It's on the east side of Center City. The Delaware River is right over that way, and downtown Philadelphia is behind me. Independence Hall is about four blocks that way. It's dwarfed by the modern buildings. I'm trying to see. I don't really know many of the other buildings, but it's all behind me. You know, I know this about Philadelphia. For a long time, there was a law in Philadelphia where no building could be taller than City Hall, which is behind us here. City Hall has a statue of William Penn at the top. And about 10 or 20 years ago, they abolished that law, which accounts for the development of all those skyscrapers behind me. I'll take Philadelphia trivia for 300, please, Alex.
I think that was supposed to be part of the reason that the city was cursed for a while, right? Because they broke that statute and they went above that building.
That might be true. So, Murph, the game
about the statue of William Penn.
Murph, the game is tonight. I believe you have to get out at 2 o'clock to head over to the stadium. Our Twitter poll today is about, you know, what we're looking for out of this game tonight. What do we want to see out of this game tonight? So what are some things that you're looking for out of this game, Murph?
There's a lot to look at and a lot to look for, I think, in this game tonight. Let me start with the offensive line where, you expect the starters to go first quarter and about halfway into the second quarter of this game tonight. And on the offensive line, you know, there's a little couple of moving parts there. First of all, Cordy Glenn is out, and there are question marks about Cordy Glenn, obviously, with the trip to Wisconsin to have the injection in his sore foot by Dr. Andrews earlier this week. And, you know, as far as his timetable for return, the Bills aren't saying much. Sean McDermott said the doctors are hopeful that he'll be ready for the opener. So that's a little bit of a wild card. On the right side of the offensive line, at right tackle, you can look for Jordan Mills to get the start today. But I think they're going to try to work in the rookie Deion Dawkins, who played his college football here at Temple. I think you can look for him to work with the ones a little bit tonight. Right guard, look for John Miller to start, the incumbent starter. But Vlad Dukas, who has been alternating first-team reps with Miller for most of this preseason, I think that will continue tonight as well. Left tackle with no Cordy Glenn. Chantrell Henderson gets the start. We all know the complication there with the 5-game suspension looming at the start of the season. So they're, I'm thinking, a day or two, maybe a week away from making some hard decisions about what the composition of that starting offensive line will be. You know, you can't. First of all, they want to figure out if Chantrell Henderson can play and help. If he can, then they can, you know, keep him around, and maybe he's a valuable backup. They got to figure out what Cordy Glenn's status is going to be for the opener. Maybe Deion Dawkins swings over and plays left tackle, maybe as soon as next week. So I'm going to keep an eye on the offensive line, I think, first and foremost today. Just who's playing? Any of the backups emerging? Does Dawkins play well? Does Vlad Dukas make a strong challenge? Hard to do that, obviously, in a preseason game, but they'll get a good long run here, that first unit offensive line, with those two backups at right tackle and right guard. And I think after this game, there might be some decisions or at least some conclusions that are reached about what that starting offensive line is going to look like on September 10th.
Murph, I think I have to agree with you with the uncertainty with Cordy Glenn and his foot and if he can play. I had a long chance to talk to Ruben yesterday in depth about this and what he feels should happen. And the question is, I mean, I know Deion is going to play on the right side tonight, but should he play on the left side as well? I mean, at some point, you got to get him some work on the left side just in case Cordy is not ready to go.
Yeah, and I don't know that tonight would be that night. It might be. We'll keep an eye on that. But I, like I said, when we get to preseason game number 3 next week, and there's a good long 9-day span here between games, maybe that's the point where the Bills say, okay, we've seen Deion on the right side. We have a better handle on what Cordy's situation is. Let's try Deion on the left side. If they came out and started practice this week with Deion getting reps on the left side, that would not surprise me as well. And as you know, back in the spring in the OTAs and minicamp, Deion Dawkins got a lot of first-team reps at left tackle. So maybe that's where eventually he winds up. I think some of the evidence that they'll gather tonight will go into helping to make that decision.
Murph, any specific names jump out as guys that might be able to make an impression and really lock down spots on this roster? I think about Eddie Yarborough, who has really been impressive throughout camp and an impressive opener. It seems like just a couple plays there, and you could really set that in stone. Him, any other names spring to mind?
Yeah, well, Yarborough, first, let's talk about him for a second. He had a big game, quite frankly, against Minnesota last week. And showed very well. He's been strong in practice. He's an interesting guy. I know the Bills want to have a healthy rotation on the defensive line, and it appears that Yarborough is emerging as a guy who's going to be part of that rotation. I don't think he's locked down a spot on the roster yet, but he's come very close to it. I heard you guys talk about Nathan Peterman, and I do think this is a big Nathan Peterman game today. He's going to get the second team reps today when the starters come out midway through the second quarter. You can look for Peterman to play the end of the first half and into the third quarter, probably deep into the third quarter. And look, there's a lot to like about Nathan Peterman so far. Even one of his teammates, Des Lewis, in the locker room last Thursday night, talked about Peterman's poise in the huddle, how you know, everything seems calm and collected about him. I know Sean McDermott feels very strongly that the game does not seem too big for Nathan Peterman, a fifth-round draft pick. You know, I know they like the way he gets rid of the ball. The ball's coming out on time. And I think they like the – I thought the whole offense last Thursday did a great job of tempo, you know, getting plays in and out without much disruption, getting plays called, and getting the snap. I mean, there was never a time when they were winding down the play clock. I thought that was good for a first preseason game, and I think Peterman had a role to play in that as well. Looking forward to seeing what Peterman can do. I do think the number 2 quarterback spot is up for grabs, and Peterman could, with a strong performance tonight, could continue his solid bid to be that guy. Where that leaves T.J. Yates, nobody knows. Interested in looking at a couple of other positions, too, the cornerback spot. So Ronald Darby is gone. In fact, he'll be on the other sideline today with the Eagles. So I think Sharice Wright has a chance tonight to show that he could be a starter at cornerback. He's obviously Mr. Uber, Sharice Wright. But he's a bona fide player. I think he and Kevon Seymour are going to kind of vie for playing time at the cornerback spot. I almost feel like they concede the nickel cornerback spot to Leonard Johnson, and they're going to leave it up to Sharice Wright and Kevon Seymour to determine who would be the starter, who will get most of the reps. Tonight's game will go a long way towards determining that. And the wide receiver core is interesting. As you know, no Jordan Matthews tonight. He's going to be out for a while with that chipped fracture in the sternum. You concede spots, I'm pretty sure, to Anquan Boldin. We'll get our first look at Boldin with the Bills tonight in a game. Zay Jones. Andre Holmes is interesting. Hasn't had a great camp, but certainly they value his experience in the league. But there are others. You know, Rod Streeter's had a strong camp. I think a couple of plays tonight, Rod Streeter could almost, you know, claim a spot on that wide receiver core. Des Lewis made the touchdown catch last Thursday night. I think he has a chance to bolster his case for playing time and a spot on the roster. Philly Brown, local guy, comes back to Philadelphia tonight. You know, he's got some special teams credentials. He's got some production in his NFL past, but I think they're going to need to see more from him. And I think Brandon Tate, who is a strong special teamer, is going to figure into this, but they're not going to keep them all. I mean, there's going to be some guys on the waiver wire, you know, Streeter, Lewis, Philly Brown, maybe Holmes, you know, guys are going to be battling for spots, given that you would think that Bolden and Zay Jones are virtual locks right now.
Murph, all right, a couple of questions that I have for you. First of all, is Ronald Darby going to play tonight? Do you know that at all?
Hey, I think so. I'm pretty sure he is. He's in the starting lineup. He's got a week's worth of practice here for Philadelphia. I don't know what the Eagles' plans are for playing their starters, but sure, I would anticipate Ronald Darby would play and start. He's the number one corner now, you know. Yeah. I'm sure they look at this as we got to get him playing. We got to get him to start.
Well, that's going to be interesting to see him play against a team that, regardless if it's preseason or regular season, the team that just traded him away and go against these guys that, yeah, you know, he's practiced with all training camp until this week. Another guy that I really want to see, and we had his dad on the show yesterday, Rob Jones, Zay Jones' dad. I really want to see him get into the game and get some reps, you know, get some passes thrown his way. I think Chris Brown said he had like 8 or 9 plays last week. This kid needs to get into the game because who knows, he might be the deep threat on this team. We have to figure out what his role is going to be on this team, and I think we need to start that tonight. He needs to play with Tyrod and Nathan Peterman.
I think you're right, Donald, and you and I talked with Rick Dennison, the offensive coordinator, a couple of days ago back in Rochester at training camp, and when we asked where the deep passing threat comes from, the deep receiving threat, I believe Zay Jones was the first name that he mentioned. Zay's been good in camp. He hasn't been spectacular in camp. You'd be hard-pressed to say he has flashed so far in camp, 3 weeks of camp. And now's a good time for him to do that. Look, he's going to make the roster. They value him. I think they feel like he's got a very bright future. But, you know, there's a chance that he starts here, and there's a pretty good chance that they're going to need him to make the kind of big plays you talk about. And it'd be great if you could see some of that tonight.
All right, Murph. Well, thank you. We will get back out to you. I think you have a couple of guests coming up here. We'll see you back at 1:30.
Actually, 1 o'clock. Mark Kelso is going to join us at 1 o'clock. At 1:30, we'll talk with Andrew Catalan, who'll call the game on Channel 7 on the TV side tonight. And at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk with Steve Tasker.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get back out to you in a bit. Have a good day. I'll talk to you soon. Good talking to Murph. Always good. I didn't even get a chance to talk to him about, you know, our producer said he went down there and had some cheesesteaks.
Everybody loves the cheesesteaks in Philly.
That's like the only thing that people want to eat when you go to Philly. Yeah. I know it's famous and all. You ever had one?
Yes. Yes, I have. I don't remember if it was Pat's or Geno's, though. Those are the two you're supposed to try.
Right.
I don't remember which one I ate at.
We're gonna have one of our producers spent some time down in Philadelphia. I'm sure he's had probably both of them, knowing him. But I've never had one. Never gone to Philadelphia and had a cheesesteak.
But you've had a cheesesteak elsewhere in the okay.
Yeah, I've had cheesesteaks elsewhere, but you know, I mean, I would go down. I'm from New Jersey, so I would take the train down to Philadelphia, but getting a cheesesteak was never on my schedule. Like, I got to make sure I go get a cheesesteak. So one day I'm going to have to do that.
How's that? Have you been to Lincoln Financial? How's that stadium?
Yeah, I went to a game down there.
Is it still called that? I think it's still called that.
Yeah, it's still called that.
You never know.
The stuff changes.
Yeah.
I grew up a Giants fan, so I went down there to see a Giants and Eagles game when I was younger. And the fans down there are just reckless. They are ruthless. They don't care. If you're a kid with the Giants jersey on, they are going to let you know about it. And it was like, come on, man. I think I was like 10 years old. My dad is like, hey, let's stop talking to my son like
that. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it was fun to go down there. I also went on a visit to Temple when I was in high school, and they took me around the stadium and all of that stuff as I thought I was going to go to Temple out of junior college. I've been to that stadium. I've been, obviously, to Philadelphia. And there are some guys like Shady, who's going back to Philadelphia. Close to home. He's from Harrisburg. Mm-hmm. Deion Dawkins, he played in that stadium. Played in Lincoln Financial. He went to Temple. So he played in that stadium. So, you know, if he has to go back, as we were talking to Murph, if he has to go back to the left side at all, I know we're going to see him on the right. But just in general, he's probably going to have some family at the game. And he's going to feel at home, you know, because he basically grew up in that stadium.
I wonder how much, you know, we've got the receivers to talk about, the line to talk about. How much can they – because the left side of the line, if Cordy Glenn is good to go, which, I mean, that's not a guarantee at this point, they've got the continuity. They've got a couple guys returning. The right side seems to be a little bit more in flux. Once you take Glenn out of there, does like the whole line become in flux or become a question mark? It's been – I think it's been a strength of this team for a couple years.
Yeah.
And here we are in a spot where it's kind of this last-minute concern.
With Cordy and his foot, it is like a last-minute concern because, you know, look, we have Ryan Groy who can play up and down the line. And I wouldn't even be shocked if they put him in there at a tackle position because he's a veteran and he's played. Now, we know he can play guard and center, but he did play some tackle in college as well, you know, and he's gotten it done. I wouldn't be shocked if you saw him out at a tackle position. Deion is going to get work on the right side. Next week he'll probably be on the left side. I don't know what's going to happen with Cordy. You know, he had this injection in his foot out in Wisconsin. You're talking about a 300-pound-plus man with other 300-pound guys pushing on a foot that's not healthy, you know. Yeah. And we talked about it with Sammy and his foot. I don't even know what's wrong with Cordy's foot, you know. So that's something that we really have to watch. If he's ready for week one, can he last through a full season? And we all know the offensive line, if you can't keep your offensive line intact for a full season, those are the teams that struggle. You know, the teams that have their offensive line intact, they usually can go through a season and have a good year. When you start having to move pieces, it's rough.
And this team might be relying on running the ball even more than they have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They might have a balance. That's the thing. I don't know what to get out of the preseason because teams are actively trying to hide what they want to do in the regular season.
Especially offseason. I mean, offense.
Yeah, so here I've got the offense that wants to get down timing, some chemistry, communication, and all that makes sense to me. But evaluating anything past that, I feel like I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
You can look terrible in the preseason, and then in the regular season, you're just good to go.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So, you know, what is there to evaluate from the line? I guess you, like, one-on-one matchups, see who looks like they know what they're doing.
Right.
And past that, you just kind of cross your fingers, and we'll see what it looks like week one.
Speaking of one-on-one matchups, Shontrell Henderson, who played left tackle last week, didn't have a good game, you know, and he didn't have one against one of the better pass rushers in the league, but this is the NFL. You're gonna face those guys every week, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about a guy who right now it's up in the air if they're going to keep him or not. He's going to run. He's probably going to start the game tonight. He has this 5-game suspension, so they have to figure out if they want to even keep him or not, you know, because if they're going to keep him, then – you know, they can keep him around until he's done with that 5 games, and then they can, you know, activate him back on the active roster. But he needs to have a much better night than he did last week if they want to keep – if he wants to be around here.
Yeah. And the receivers are another thing to watch. I don't know who slots where. You know, with Sammy, you had Watkins is your number one. He's on the outside. I mean, you can move him around and put him anywhere you want. And now it feels like there's a little bit of a, all right, Zay Jones is the guy you're counting on the outside because Bolden's slot guy.
Right.
Matthews is a slot guy. I mean, ideally, I thought Jones was going to be maybe a slot guy. Where do like the receivers slot in from a positional standpoint? Or is a Rick Dennison offense the kind of thing that's going to not really have traditional spots?
Right.
Where everyone's just kind of be interchangeable and move around.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that right now is up in the air. I mean, you trade Sammy Watkins away. He was the deep threat on this team. Right now, we just don't know who's going to be the deep threat. Essentially, it seems like you have a team of slot receivers, you know, so somebody has to be the deep threat. We had Coach Rick Dennison on the show, and he was saying you have to throw the ball down the field 8 times a game, you know, and so now who's going to be that guy who they throw the ball down the field to? Zay Jones, 4.45 speed, you know, he can get down the field. Not the same as Sammy Watkins. Rod Streeter, definitely not the same as Sammy Watkins. Yeah. He's had a good camp. But, you know, are you going to say this is our deep threat? And you can't make it so obvious that every time he comes in the game, he's a deep threat, you know. So they got to figure this stuff out.
And one thing, and I want to ask you about this. So I'll get the occasional tweet about 40 times that, like, Streeter and Jones or whichever ones have pretty comparable 40 times to Sammy. But if you're going to run a deep route from the outside and they know it's coming, they're going to try and throw off that timing. Like, it's
right.
Not just about running fast.
Right.
It's about getting around that guy.
Exactly.
And getting around him on the side that you're supposed to. And if – I mean, Sammy was great at that.
Right.
It's one of his strengths.
Yeah.
And can anybody – one of these guys, while they do have the speed, do they have what it takes off the line to beat their guy?
Right. And you're talking about Zay Jones, who has been trained well, you know, and seems like he's ready for this league and ready for – bump and run coverage, but we haven't really seen him do it in a game yet, you know, and we haven't seen him go against – last week he didn't really play, so we got to see him go against – he probably is going to go against Ronald Darby, you know, and so can we see him separate from Ronald Darby? Can he get around that and get down the field, and can we connect on some of those things? I think this offense is going to be more of – it's a timing offense. They're going to throw the ball underneath a lot, but they have to be able to get the ball down the field to a Zay Jones, also to a Charles Clay. You know, Charles can get up the seam, and he can be the deep threat up the middle of the field. But somebody has to be able to threaten the defense on the outside. So I guess, you know, there's a lot to look for out of this game. We want to know from you as well. What are you looking for from tonight? What are you looking for out of this second preseason game? There's a lot of guys that are going to have – that need to have big games if they want to stick around, especially if you're a backup. We know the starters will play three quarters next week. Traditionally, they play three quarters in the third preseason game. So if you're a backup, you need to make a strong push tonight because you're going to play a lot. So we want to know from you, from the fans. You can call us. You can tweet us at John Murphy Show. I am at DAJones19. You are?
Jeremy WGR.
Jeremy WGR, at Jeremy WGR. Or you can call us. The phone number is 803-0550, outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-552-5550. Call us up. Let us know your thoughts. Jeremy, you brought up a guy, Eddie Yarbrough.
Yeah.
Who is a guy that I think is going to be on the roster. I don't think he's just going to be on the roster. I think he's going to play a lot. You know, Shaq is, you know, we expect Shaq to do good things, a lot better than he did last year. And I felt like a lot of people didn't think Shaq had a good year last year.
I'll be honest, I didn't forget about him. Mm-hmm. But by the time he shows up in the season, it just kind of felt like the defense at that point had its struggles, and we saw struggles from that defense throughout. So, you know, maybe if you were expecting him to come back and make a big difference, it didn't look all that different. Not to say he individually had a bad year,
right.
But yeah, I think he did get lost in the shuffle for a lot of people.
He did, and you know, I think it was really tough for him. I mean, the guy didn't practice at all, and he was just thrown into the mix. And this is not to make excuses for a guy. And I also just don't think he was comfortable doing what he had to do last year. Even speaking to Jerry Hughes, who played on the other side, Jerry talked about how he had to communicate with the DBs. Yeah, that's something Shaq didn't do in college at all. I mean, he just put his hand in the dirt and rushed the passer. It seems like Shaq is happy to be back in this 4-3 scheme. And that's all he has to do is rush the passer. I expect a better season out of him. But Eddie Yarbrough is a guy who showed a lot last week. Hopefully he can even improve upon. Even if he gets one sack this week, tonight, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, this dude is
yeah.
– he's going to play.
Buy your family tickets to the opener. Get a, you
exactly.
know, you get a sack tonight, go ahead and buy some tickets.
Exactly, because listen, I made the team.
I tend to think he's already there. I mean,
you
don't want to – I mean, if everything falls apart, that's different, and you don't want to get hurt, of course. But, I mean, he's made such an impression so quickly that I think he's pretty safe.
I think he's safe. You know, even in – because throughout training camp, and we watch, I tend to watch the skill positions. I tend to watch outside and the wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, DBs, even some of the linebackers. I don't typically watch the line play, offensive line and defensive line play, during training camp practices. It's just tough. It's too much going on in there. And I kept hearing everyone talk about Eddie Yarbrough, and I'm like, let me watch this kid, you know, and practice. I'm like, all right, you know, maybe we'll see something out of him in the game, and we did, you know. So now – I'm telling you, if he has one sack, I think he's already there, but if he has one sack, he's not only going to make this team, he's going to play. He's going to be in a healthy rotation. He, along with Shaq, along with Jerry, and even Lorenzo, who's going to come down on the line of scrimmage. But once again, I think it's good if Eddie Yarbrough can really produce for this team because you don't have to ask so much out of Lorenzo. You know, and Lorenzo's going to play special teams still.
Well, you know how it's going to go by the end of this game. When it's over, all the reaction's going to be, here's all the Peterman reaction, and here's everybody else.
Right?
It's, what do you have to say about Peterman? How did he look? Did he look like he had command of the offense? It's the preseason. It's the time for overreaction, especially if it's a young quarterback. There's going to be tons of overreaction for that. So, you know, it's normal. We've done this with Jeff Toole.
Mm-hmm.
We've done this with maybe Cardale Jones. You know, Cardale Jones had a nice game against the Colts last year, and – you know, I watched that game a couple times and thought, oh, there's some good things that you see in there. And ultimately, he's not on the team. So just that he has a nice game doesn't mean much. But it's without a doubt, it's number one reason I'll be watching is because of Peterman tonight.
Because of Peterman?
And
I think a lot of people are.
And I don't mean to dismiss Tyrod. I just think Tyrod's the starter. And anything I watch in this game, good or bad from him, I'm going to wait to evaluate Taylor based on how he plays in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Peterman, this might be this week and next week and then Detroit might be the last three looks I get at him for a good solid, you know, couple months, maybe year.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get – no, after tonight, he's not going to – you won't see him until the last preseason game, and I don't know how much he'll play. He might play a lot in that last preseason game. just because they know he's not really going to play. You know, yeah. Tyrod is the guy.
You think they just give Yates number two again in number in the third preseason game? Go Tyrod for a half and maybe more, and then Yates to clean it up and Peterman just not play?
I think Peterman will at least get a quarter.
A little bit.
Third preseason, and then you'll go with Yates, and then you have to figure out what you're going to do with Yates. We have some calls on the line. 803, if you want to call up, 803-0550, outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to Rich. He has a question on the defensive side of the ball. Rich, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Donna?
Good.
Good. So I've called in a couple times this preseason and off season. A huge concern I have in mind is with the safeties, particularly the safety depth. And something I was just kind of wondering, I started a new job. I didn't be able to make it out to camp as much as I would like to. I made it out one day. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really heard anything about Jordan Poyer. And I know he's supposed to be a starter. But I've been hearing things about Shamil Gary, and I'm wondering if we should read anything into that. I mean, do you have any light to shed on Poyer? I mean, I've heard good things about Hyde, but I just haven't heard anything on Poyer at all. I mean, I guess it could be a good thing. He's laying low and
yeah, right.
Hear about him. It's a good thing type thing. I don't know. I'm just wondering if you have any insight on that at all.
You know, I haven't heard really much on Poyer as well. I think I think Poyer is doing a good job out there, and maybe like you said, maybe it's a good thing that you haven't really heard much from him. I think he's playing well with Micah. Maybe we'll see tonight. You know, maybe we'll see what's going to happen, or if Poyer is really a good safety aside from Micah Hyde behind them. Yes, you do have Shamil Gary, and Shamil Gary probably is going to be on this team. You have Colt Anderson as well. We have to, you know. He hasn't really done much at all, so I'm sure he's going to play tonight in the game because he's a core special teams guy, though. So, yeah, there's still some question marks at the safety position. It depends how many safeties he's going to keep. Depends on the cornerbacks as well. We have another call on the line. We're going to get to Russ in Buffalo. He has another question about linebackers. We're going to get to him on the other side of this thing. We have Murph coming back, though, at 12:30. He has our TV play-by-play man, Andrew Ketelon, on with him. We're going to get his thoughts on his game tonight. And that's on the other side of this thing. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. I am Donald Jones, filling in for Murph. Jeremy White sitting in for me in my chair.
I'm keeping your seat warm.
Yeah, keeping my seat. Don't keep it too warm, because yeah. Then I'm going to have to go and sanitize it or something. But, so Jeremy White sitting in with me. The team is down in Philadelphia getting ready to play the Philadelphia Eagles tonight, 7 p.m. You can watch the game on WKBW. You can also hear the game. And you can hear Murph's call on WGR 550. We're going to go back out to Murph, back down to Philadelphia. He's standing alongside Andrew Ketelon, who will be calling the game on the TV side of things. Murph, how you doing? Are you there?
We are here, Donald. Thank you very much. I am. Andrew Ketelon from the NFL on CBS is with us, and he'll call the game tonight on Channel 7 in Buffalo, on Wham 13 TV in Rochester, and, of course, on WTVH in Syracuse. We've got the call of the game on the radio. Andrew, good to be with you again.
Murph, this is a unique setting for an interview. I've never been on a pool deck before. Yeah. This is great.
It's great. We're thinking about doing the entire show on pool decks.
I think you should. This should be part of the budget.
Hey, you, Andrew, of course, does a number of duties on CBS, including the NFL on CBS, NCAA basketball. I watch all winter. And you're just off your appearance on the PGA Championship down in Charlotte. Pretty interesting tournament again, I guess, this past week.
Fantastic. Sorry, I missed the Bills game last week, but it's great to be back. And the PGA was really exciting. And, of course, the big news is that they're moving the PGA Championship to May, which I think is a great move, not only for the PGA Championship, but for all of golf. Now they're going to probably finish the FedEx Cup playoffs before week one of the NFL season. So I think it opens up a lot more courses around the country, Texas, Florida, areas that don't usually get a lot of PGA championships or any PGA championships. So it was a big week down there.
Oak Hill and Rochester has been on the regular circuit of PGA championship courses from the PGA of America. And a lot of us upstate New York were wondering if, you know, mid-May, maybe the last half of May, if that might mitigate against getting a PGA championship in the future simply because of the weather.
Yeah, I was at Oak Hill in 2013. Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. I don't think this will change that. In fact, they've already committed to going there down the road. It's going to be probably late May, maybe the weekend before Memorial Day weekend. I think it's obviously more of a challenge for the grounds crew in Rochester or maybe Long Island, Bethpage Black, to get that ready. But I don't think it'll prevent them from going there. It'll just be a few more hurdles to overcome. But I think Oak Hill did a great job the last time they hosted it. I know the PGA probably want to go back there, and they have already committed to that, and I think you'll see more down there.
Andrew Catalan joins us, not to talk about golf, but to talk about football and your regular turn coming up with the NFL on CBS and a new partner this year, former Bills wide receiver, Hall of Famer James Lofton. You'll be working with him this year.
Yeah, I'm really excited to work with James. I'm going to miss working with Steve Tasker every day. It's great that Task and I can still do these preseason games together because not only do I think he's a tremendous broadcaster, as you know, but he's also become a very dear friend. So it'll be a little different not being with Steve every week on the road. But what Task has told me, and I've gotten to know James just a little bit, just how great of a guy he is. Obviously, Bills fans know a Hall of Fame wide receiver.
Yeah.
And I did his audition with CBS back in February, so we called a half of a game off a TV monitor together. And we hit it off, and I've heard great things about him. So I'm going from one Bills legend to another.
James Lofton, lucky guy. Yeah, James Lofton is a great guy. He's got an interesting resume in that he is a Hall of Fame receiver, but people tend to forget that he coached in the league. He coached with the Raiders, I believe, and the Chargers, and had a successful stint as a wide receiver coach. I think he came close to being a coordinator at one time or another.
Yeah, he was with the Chargers for a while. Yeah. I think that gives him a unique perspective because he's had the game as a player, Hall of Famer, as a coach, and now in the broadcast booth. He's been doing Sunday Night Football radio for the last several years, so I think it should be a seamless transition.
When you get on the air with James Lofton, make sure you ask him to do his Al Davis imitation. He does a great
will.
Al Davis imitation, and there's a couple of off-color words in there that'll probably clean up for your broadcast, but congratulations to you for that. Now, you've got the Bills tonight with our buddy Steve Tasker and Mike Catalana on the sidelines, and you've been around the Bills now for a couple of years. Needless to say, there's a major change in the tone and tenor of this team in preseason this year compared to the last two. Huh?
Yeah, no question. I think it's night and day in terms of the way the coaches are approaching the preseason and the schedule and everything. But from what I've heard of Sean so far, I'm very impressed. He seems to have a very detailed, specific game plan that he's executing so far right to a T. And, you know, from the way that the players dress to the way that they hold their meetings. Obviously, the big news this week when he stopped practice on Monday,
yeah.
I thought that grabbed not only the attention of his players, but the attention of everyone. Like, he's the boss, and this is the way it's going to be. And I've been impressed with what he said so far.
First couple of weeks at camp, we were on this show talking about how quiet it had been around training camp. Nothing going on, a very workman-like, business-like camp. And then all of a sudden, last week, they signed Anquan Boldin and then make two really big trades. Things kind of exploded around the Bills last week.
Yeah, bold trades, big moves, and I'm fascinated to see how it plays out. I think that Jordan Matthews, when healthy, will be a really nice addition to a receiving core that I think that's one of the questions tonight that I want to see, Murph. Are these guys going to start to establish some roles? Who's going to be on the inside? Who's going to be on the outside? Who's going to step up with Matthews not playing to have an opportunity here? I mean, there really is a big opportunity for some of these younger wide receivers, even some guys that are new to the team, like an Andre Holmes, like a Rod Streeter. That's a question mark for me. But about the trades, yeah, I mean, that is a huge change, and we're going to talk to Steve Tasker about tonight. If he was a player in that locker room, how would he have responded to these moves? I'm curious to get Tasker's take.
What about the addition of Anquan Boldin, which is just about a week and a half old now, and he'll see his first action tonight? There's a certain element of not just veteran leadership but presence that he brings, along with a great skill set. The guy can still play, right?
I think it's fantastic to bring a guy like Boldin into that wide receiver meeting room, just with so many younger guys, so many guys that are just starting out, or just the leadership that he provides. I did a number of Lions games last year. I thought he was fantastic in that role. He's, you know, in the slot, red zone target, at 8 touchdowns last season. But then you bring in a guy off the field in the meeting room that can really help the younger players. I think it's a great move all around.
Talking with Andrew Catalan from the NFL on CBS. He'll call the Bills game tonight on TV, the Bills broadcast with Steve Tasker and Mike Catalana. A lot of us are waiting for second-round draft pick Zay Lewis to sort of flash, you know, to show us some spectacular play, which he's been steady through the spring and through the summer so far, but a night like tonight could be a big night for him.
Yeah, I think, he didn't even have a target in the game last week, so I think they'll try to get him the ball a little bit more, if I had to guess. And, you know, I think that we forget sometimes that there's such a drastic change from college and to being a rookie. I think Reggie Ragland is basically a rookie this year, too, and people are looking for him to kind of show up a little bit more. And I think that we talked to Sean McDermott yesterday in our production meeting. He's starting to see some progress from Reggie. I'm curious to see him tonight. But, you know, these young guys, these preseason games, that's what they're there for. A lot of people think about preseason, you know, you don't get to see the star. These are massive opportunities for young guys to get familiar with the offense or the defense and to get some reps.
We're going
to
get it. You would anticipate a good long look at rookie quarterback Nathan Peterman tonight. I, for one, am pretty excited about that. He did flash last week against Minnesota. He's had good moments in camp. And many of us think he could be, you know, he is definitely challenging for the number two and may be able to take a big step forward with a good performance tonight.
Yeah, I think it'll be a big step up against the twos. Now, yeah. Last week it was against Minnesota late in the game. They had their third stringers in. He might even see some of the Eagles' first team defense tonight, depending on when he goes into the game. So I think it's a big test for him. But so far, it seems like he's been able to handle everything that's thrown his way and anxious to see how he performs tonight.
Andrew, of course, those of us who follow the Bills, I know you do as well, know that last year's issues were on the defensive side of the ball. It's a brand new defense with a lot of new faces, especially on the back end. And I think the Bills are eager to get that thing going because they believe, I think, there's talent there, but they want to get a cohesive defensive plan going and probably be as good a time as any tonight to get that started.
Yeah, and with Sean McDermott, you know, that's obviously his focus. And I think he's been working closely with the defense to try to get them up to speed. And I think a lot of it now is communication. And what you're seeing and hearing is Micah Hyde has done a great job of bringing that secondary together. You know, there's some younger guys. Jordan Poyer only played six games last year because of the lacerated kidney. But it seems like they're starting to gel. Roles are being established. Jerry Hughes has had a great camp and a good preseason game. So I think that they're on the right track there.
Andrew Catalan will call the play-by-play on the TV side tonight of the Bills in Philadelphia. I had one of those oh-my-goodness moments as a play-by-play guy last Thursday night against Minnesota at the National Anthem when they lined up, and there were obviously 90 players, and they went from one 20-yard line to the other. And I was like, oh, how are we going to sort through all of this? You know that feeling, I'm sure, right? There's a lot of moving parts in games like
this. It's really different to prepare for a preseason game than a regular season game. You got the 90 guys on the Bills, and you got to know every single one of them. And then, meanwhile, you know, the Eagles, that's not really our focus tonight.
Right.
So it's very strange to barely have any information on one team and then massive amounts of information on the other, but that's our audience. Looking forward to bringing it to you tonight.
You do have the Eagles with, obviously, Ronald Darby. Yep. Corey Graham, starter for the Bills the last few years, back there in the back end. There's a Buffalo native and a UB product, Stephen Means, playing on the Eagles. So there are a couple of local storylines, including Jim Schwartz, the former Buffalo defensive coordinator.
And Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator. It's really bizarre that there's this many connections between these two teams. And there's going to be a lot of familiar faces on each side. So I think we got a lot of nice storylines for tonight.
I do, too. And I like you, I enjoy preseason. But I do think there may be a better way. And I want to get your thoughts on this before we let you go. I heard somebody smart say this week, look, the first preseason game is, you know, nobody's playing. The fourth preseason game, certainly nobody plays. How about cutting it down to two? And I was thinking, cut it down to two and maybe have one rookie, first year, anybody else you want, 53-man roster, 45-man roster game. Maybe you have to discount ticket prices. Maybe it doesn't go on, you know, TV. Probably would. People would come. People would watch. But is there a way maybe to – the commissioners even admit it that preseason football is not the best showcase for the NFL product. Any thoughts on that?
There's been some talk of maybe going down to three games. I could see that as a possibility. But, you know, that said, opportunities for guys that, you know, wouldn't make the roster or wouldn't get anything on tape or need this experience, I think it really serves a purpose. I could see it going 4-3, but I think it's going to be there, you know, in some form or fashion for a long time.
Yeah, I hope so. Have a great broadcast tonight.
Thanks, Murph. Great seeing you. Thanks for having me on your pool deck.
Yeah.
I'm sweating now. I'm going to jump
Pool's
in the
right
pool.
Over there.
Yeah, thank you.
Andrew Catalan will call the game on Channel 7 in Buffalo, on WHAM 13 TV in Rochester, and on WTVH in Syracuse tonight, along with Steve Tasker and Mike Catalana. Andrew Catalan from the NFL on CBS. Let's send it back to the studio to Donald and Jeremy. Fellas?
Thanks, Murph. So they talked about they're standing in front of the pool. They're on the pool deck at the hotel.
It's a nice spot to be.
Did you ever shoot a radio show or do any interviews or anything from a pool deck?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Well, where's the craziest place you've done an interview?
Boy, that's good. Oh, from the paddock at the Belmont Stakes.
Oh.
Yeah, we did a radio show, the Triple Crown, 2009 maybe, when Smarty Jones was going for the Triple Crown. Brad Ryder and I went and broadcast from the Belmont Stakes in the horse paddocks, like back where all the horses are. So we were sitting here doing the show, and there were horses like right there.
Well,
that's probably the best answer.
So I remember a time when we were playing the Bengals out in Cincinnati. Stevie and I are walking middle of the city, and they have, you know, the horse and buggy. And Stevie's like, hey, man, look at his horse, right? And the horse had, like, a big drool thing hanging from his mouth. Like, it was hanging from his mouth all the way basically to the ground, but it was still hanging, and it just was there. And Stevie was starting to play around with the horse, and the horse, like, shook his head and tried to throw it at Stevie. It was the funniest thing ever. But when you guys are sitting there doing the interviews, did it stink? Was there anything crazy behind you?
It smelled like a horse kind of place. I mean, we watched them, doing the shoe process. It was, backstage at the Belmont Stakes is not exactly the most wonderful smelling place in the world. But it was pretty cool. Let me ask you something. When they were talking about Anquan Boldin, they were showing the highlights, and this is something I noticed at training camp, but I wanted to ask you. So he's got his gloves hanging from the face mask mm-hmm. as he's warming up, and I guess that means, like, would a receiver normally just warm up without gloves and then put them on?
Yeah, so some guys, and there are multiple reasons why you do this. I used to do it as well, especially during practice. During the games, I had my gloves on. But in practice, I would warm up. We do individuals with the gloves on the face mask. For two reasons. Number one, you just want to feel the ball actually hit your hands. You want to warm up with no gloves just in case you can't use the gloves in the game. Maybe it starts to rain or something like that, you know, and so you just want to catch the ball with no gloves and get the feeling of the ball in your actual hands, and then you go and put the gloves on. The other side of it is just a swag thing, you know, like you're just out there.
It looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. You got the gloves hanging from your face mask, and you know, all guys want to look swagalicious, as I say to Murph. So, yeah, there's multiple reasons why guys will do that. So we're going to get to another break here. Russ in Buffalo has some questions about who will be our, you know, certain linebackers. We're going to get to Russ in Buffalo on the other side of the break. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Donald Jones. Jeremy White filling in for me. I'm filling in for Murph. Murph is down in Philadelphia. We got a lot of things going on here and down in Philadelphia all at one time, but we're making it happen. We're going to get out to Russ in Buffalo, who's been on the line for a little while now. Russ in Buffalo, how you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good.
I got a couple questions real quick here. Who are the starting linebackers of the 4-3 defense that we're looking at now?
The starting linebackers right now, I believe, are Preston in the middle. You are going to have Ramon Humber on the weak side, and then the strong side.
Lorenzo.
Is Lorenzo, yeah.
Okay. What are we going to do with this Reggie Ragland? This kid's got to play. That's his thing. He could start. He's a run-stopping linebacker. I mean, he seems to be going a little too slow with this kid to suit me. I know he's still kind of injured, but he looked pretty good to me the other night for a guy who's injured.
You know, I felt like he looked pretty good as well the other night. I know a lot of people were complaining that he slipped on – I only seen him slip once. People thought he slipped on a couple of different things. But I felt like he made some plays out there, especially as he got deeper into the game. And the fact of the matter is Reggie Ragland had a serious injury. He hadn't played a game since his last national championship game in Alabama. The knee injury, he didn't play at all last year, and this year he has to really just get his feet back underneath him, you know. And you have the fact of the injury itself, you know, and trying to come back from that injury. And it's a new defense, you know. And so he has so many different things that he's dealing with right now. I think the coaching staff, they're really going to give him some time. You know, they're not going to try to rush him back, because if you do, it could be good or it could be bad. And I think they want to just take their time with
him. Yeah, as a second-round pick, I mean, he's under contract for a couple of years here.
Right.
You've either got to be patient and see if you can get it to work out and get him to be the right scheme fit. I end up just feeling for Reggie Ragland. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy that right when he gets hurt, I mean, we know Rex was prone to hyperbole, but Rex pretty much talked about, like, he lost the best player on his team.
Yeah.
He was very high on him. And to suffer that injury and to try to come back from that while switching schemes and maybe being in a scheme that's not ideally fit for you,
right?
It's a tough spot. Ramon Humber, to me, is the guy that we don't really know much about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lorenzo Alexander had a great year last year. We'll see how he fits in this defense. Preston Brown has played for this team before. But Ramon Humber is this, like, if you were to ask Bills fans to name the 10 members of the defense, I guess he'd be, like, the last guy. Because when initially signed, I thought it was more of, like, a depth special teams guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's one of your starting linebackers. So that's one of the guys to be in the mix, of course.
Murph and I were talking about this. Ramon Humber I mean, coming into in the spring and then coming into training camp, everybody's like, who's going to be your weak side linebacker? And Ramon Humber was the guy, and the coaching staff was high on Ramon Humber. And we started to talk about the young guys, you know. And then they brought in Gerald Hodges. He's been in the middle primarily. Reggie is not a weak side linebacker. He's going to be either be in the middle or even on the strong side. So you had the two young guys in Vallejo and Milano. And both of those guys, I mean, I didn't really see too much of them in the game. So I guess that's a good thing. You know, you didn't really see any bad plays from them. But Ramon Humber is a guy who really seems to have that weak side linebacker position on a stranglehold. He seems like he's the guy, you know. And so that might be a position that people are watching as well. And if he can really hold on to that thing throughout the rest of the preseason.
And the secondary is entirely new. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at this team, there are a lot of changes, a lot of roster turnover for one season.
Yeah, it's a lot. And you know, this happens, I guess, when you get a whole new regime, new GM, new coaching staff. These things happen where you have this roster turnover, but it's like, wow, like this is a whole new roster for the most. It's a whole new roster, you know, and the only thing that you still have is the offensive line, the quarterback, and the running back. Jonathan Williams was there as well, and then I guess two tight ends,
yeah.
You know, but everybody else is new. Zay Jones, Andre Holmes, Anquan Boldin, like all of the receivers are new. I mean, we really got to watch, especially early in the season, to see if these guys have really caught on to this offense and this defense and the special teams, these new schemes that they have. But a guy like Reggie Ragland, I think he has to deal with a lot right now. And I don't know if they're going to field any calls or anything like that to see if he would be traded or if anybody would want to take him on. I don't even know if anybody would take him on right now.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to really do anything for you right away.
You can't imagine the price would be all that high. Like, it would just be like taking a flyer on a guy. Don't forget, two new quarterbacks. I mean, and that might really mean one new quarterback.
Exactly.
But one new quarterback that people will be watching tonight.
Yeah, one new quarterback. People are definitely watching Nathan Peterman. I'm watching TJ Yates, though. I want to see if he can show us anything. You know, if he can show us anything. But Nathan Peterman is the guy that everybody is watching. I'm sure that Murph is going to talk to our next guest, who Murph is going to be standing alongside with down in Philadelphia, Mark Kelso. He's going to be calling the game with Murph on WGR tonight, WGR 550. He's the color guy with Murph. You hear him all the time. We'll get back to those guys out in Philadelphia on the other side of this break. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it.
Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks.
Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone.
Boy, touch to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Donald Jones. He is Jeremy White. He's filling in for me. I'm filling in for Murph. The team is down in Philadelphia, getting ready to play the Philadelphia Eagles tonight at 7 p.m. You can hear the game on WGR 550. You can also watch it on WKBW. You know, we've been talking about guys that are going back home. Another guy that I think everybody's overlooking is Coach McDermott as he goes back to Philadelphia. And I think, you know, we're all still watching the staff to see how they run the game, clock management, all of that stuff.
Yeah, preseason for coaches too. It's practice for them. And one thing I'll be looking for tonight, in the opener against Minnesota, McDermott elected to go for three or four fourth downs. Mm-hmm. And at times where I know it's the preseason, so what I'd like to know is if he did it just because it's the preseason, whatever, let's get Peterman some more looks here, or if a fourth and eight at the 38 with 8 minutes left in the game is the kind of play he's going to go for.
Right.
They went for a couple of fourth downs, one where Tashard Choice, man, that's what I'm thinking. Who am I thinking of? Tywan Jones.
Tywan Jones.
All right. Sorry. I was close.
Tashard is down
close.
In Dallas.
A lot of Bills players over the years. Tywan Jones dropped that play on fourth down. They had two or three or four different attempts to go for it in that fourth quarter when You could have punted. You could have kicked.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I want to know if McDermott's going to be the kind of coach that is aggressive like that, and that's something we can look for here in game number two.
You know, it's always difficult for me because in the preseason, I know coaches are trying to set up certain situations. Like, I know they sometimes want to see a kicker kick. Sometimes they want to see if this running back can pick it up for us on fourth down, if he can be our short yardage guy. And so it's so hard for me to really get a handle on how these coaches want to manage a game throughout the preseason, just because they are really trying to set up different situations. It's just hard for me, you know? And so, I don't know, it's crazy. Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Donald Jones, he's Jeremy White. As we're filling in, the team is down in Philadelphia, getting ready to play the Philadelphia Eagles tonight at 7 p.m., standing out in Philadelphia on the pool deck is our guy Murph. He's standing
hanging
along.
At the pool all day.
Yeah, he's hanging at the pool all day while we're sitting in here in the studio. I think he said it was 80 plus down there or something like that. So it feels good. Maybe it feels good enough for him to even jump in the water before he heads on over to the stadium. But he's standing alongside our guy Mark Kelso, who calls the games. He does color alongside Murph on WGR 550. We're going to throw it back down to Murph down in Philadelphia. Murph, how you doing?
Doing great, Donald and Jeremy. Thanks very much. I'm standing alongside a native son of the Keystone State. Mark Kelso comes back home along with several Buffalo Bills.
Well, and drafted by the Eagles.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Released by the Eagles, but we won't talk about that.
Ingloriously released by the Eagles.
I had an opportunity to play with some great players there. I mean, Coach Fred Bruni was a defensive back coach, and he had a long career in the NFL. And then I was playing with Wes Hopkins and Roy Nell Young and Ray Ellis, and Andre Waters was a young player there as well. So had an opportunity to play alongside some really, really talented players in the NFL in my time in Philadelphia.
How long was that time? Just one camp? One preseason?
Just one camp, yeah. They released me right before the last game. I mean, I still think they had the same schedule where they played that last Thursday night preseason game, and they released me that Monday. And there's some interesting stories about that. No, we don't have time for that now. But
how long before the Bills called you?
I probably worked out for the Bills sometime mid-October, and they were bringing a couple guys back from injury reserve. I went and worked out a little bit, but they didn't ultimately sign me until February after that 1985 season.
Things worked out pretty well.
I would say so.
Yeah. Mark Kelso is with us, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network.
Now I'm a native son of – someone asked, where are you from? Where's your hometown? And with all due respect to the Keystone State, I mean, I've been in Buffalo so long, I got to consider
Buffalo
my hometown.
Guy. Of course, you're a Buffalo guy. Calling the game tonight on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network with me, Mark Kelso, and I will have Sal Capaccio down on the sidelines, 7 o'clock kickoff, pregame at 5 o'clock on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Maybe it's me, and maybe we force it too much. I find myself fascinated by most preseason games, but especially this year, these preseason games. I can't wait till kickoff tonight.
Yeah, fascination might be a strong word, right, in this situation.
Intrigued?
Intrigued. And I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by the effort that these young players expend to try to make a roster. And this year, as you mentioned, it kind of expands it to the entire roster, because with what happened last week or this week, after last week's game, I mean, you don't really know who's safe or how they want to shape this roster. Now, I do think there's some guys that definitely have a spot on this roster, but they're trying to remake it in the image that they foresee would be a team that's going to be exceptionally successful, and they've got an idea, they've got a template, and they're trying to execute that now. So each week there's going to be a reshaping, and there may be more things that happen, but there's a lot of energy expended by these young players, and every one of these young men who make it to an NFL camp has a lot of talent and probably played at an extremely high level, whatever level of college they played in. So it's really encouraging to me to see the effort that they expend to make the 53-man roster.
A lot of roster building going on. Sean McDermott said something Tuesday morning at training camp, Mark, which I thought perfectly captured his philosophy of what they're trying to do, he and Brandon Bean, the entire staff. He said, we're not just looking to accumulate talent here. We're looking to build a team. What do you think he meant by that?
Well, and I think it's the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. You obviously have to have talent in this league, but if you have extreme talent in this league, you can win in the short term, but if you don't put them together as a team, and it's everybody's not looking out for the best interests of the team, and then when the team's successful, those individual guys that play at such a high level will get their reward as well. But you've got to construct it like a team. I guess I can talk about Baltimore's locker room, but one time had an opportunity to walk in the front of Baltimore's game day locker room, and they've got six words, three little phrases, the team, then bigger the team, and then a huge sign
that says
the team.
Schembeckler thing.
It is. Yeah. And I think But I really believe that that's the way to have success in this league. You have a lot of talented players, but if they can't play as a unit and they can't function as a unit, if they don't know where their help is, if they don't understand leverage control, because I've got to be outside this particular receiver if we're talking about defensive backs, because I know the linebacker is going to be in this spot on the inside shoulder of this potential receiver, and then that will create an effective defense. If things don't go well on the offensive line, there's no way you're going to execute an effective running play. So ultimately, the NFL game and the game of football in and of itself is the ultimate team game, because so many things have to fit together seamlessly to create success.
The talent that got away last Friday in the trades, the two trades, obviously Ronald Darby, we'll talk about him. We'll see him tonight. But Sammy Watkins is the big piece of the puzzle. And I wonder what you thought about, you know, where the Bills put themselves without Sammy Watkins, without, you know, there are a lot of reasons why Sammy was traded away. His health, the uncertainty about his foot, the contract at the end of the year. But a lot of it, I think, has to do with just what he's done and maybe how he fits into the roster here. What do you make of all that?
Well, and I think, and a wise person once instructed me sometimes, when you're in a situation and something takes you by surprise, step back a little bit, remove yourself from the situation, rethink it a little bit before you respond. And I think if people step back from the situation and they say, well, why would they deal Sammy Watkins? I mean, he's the vertical threat that we have. He's really the only vertical threat right now. Zay Jones might become that player. Philly Brown has an opportunity because of his speed. I know Tywan Jones they just signed, but I don't really see him in that role, but he's got great speed as well. You've got to be able to take the top off the defenses. But you look at Sammy and say, he's got the injury, probably not going to pick up next year if he has a really good year. Are we going to spend all this money to sign him again when his health is in question? And I think they said, I don't know that we're going to do that, and that's an uncertainty. So we have an opportunity to get a high-round draft pick and supplant that situation, get better, you know, addition through subtraction. So you subtract a really good player, but you bring in Anquan Boldin, who was already in the building. You bring in Jordan Matthews, who's almost the statistical equivalent of Sammy Watkins, with the exception of his yards per catch, which are down around 10.5, 11 yards per catch, where Sammy was up there 14 or 15. So you look at those situations and you say, this might not be the most unfavorable thing, even though it took a lot of players by surprise and players that have built relationships with Sammy Watkins and were counting on him to be a big part of this Bills offense. And certainly you can understand their frustration this week, but eventually this week with this game tonight and in subsequent weeks, that'll go away.
With Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, we're getting set for the Bills and the Eagles here in Philadelphia later tonight. There was speculation that the trade and the hangover effect on the trade may have impacted the way that Bills practice this week, in particular sort of a sluggish, sloppy start to practice on Monday. I guess that's understandable if that's indeed what it was. I watched a Monday practice that certainly was not getting off to a good start. If anything, I guess I would concede that there was probably an uneasy feeling among players on the roster after such a upheaval on Friday afternoon.
And guys that have built relationships. I know Coach McDermott and this staff are talking about the culture. They want guys they want guys to love each other on the team, and it's all about covering your brother and stepping inside, you know, stepping up for your brother when you have an opportunity to make a play, kind of playing side by side and like a brotherhood, like we talk about in the military, which, you know, our U.S. military is so good at, is creating a brotherhood of people and kind of a unified purpose, and they can accomplish their goal. And I think that's some of the mentality that Coach McDermott and his staff has. And then you unplug a couple key components, what you thought were a couple key components. It's going to take a while to get that unification back together again. And I'm sure there was some frustration. And all the guys said the right things in the press. And you talked to Tyrod Taylor, but there's no question he had to be feeling some frustration because they had such a good chemistry with Sammy Watkins. And again, as the weeks wear on, that will go away and they'll come together as a team again. But that happens in every training camp. It actually does. And I heard Coach McDermott address that. It happens in every training camp. I had never seen it before until my experience in Philadelphia. But we had some all-out brawls that my rookie year with some of those defensive players. And Ron Jaworski was playing quarterback. And I can remember then for sure. And certainly with my time with the Bills, we had plenty of times when you're 2 weeks into camp, you're frustrated, you want to be home with your family, if in fact you have a family, or you want to be back in Orchard Park in your permanent residence. And there's some frustration that ensues, and sometimes there's some pushing and shoving. So not an uncommon thing, but important that they begin to come together. And quite frankly, I think that's part of the coming together process as well.
Hey, Mark, one of the pieces unplugged last Friday was Ronald Darby, who's now here in Philadelphia. There's been a lot of discussion about whether he fits and what the Bills' defensive scheme is on the back end in the secondary. Can you give us an example of maybe the skill set required for the zone-based concepts that McDermott wants to play compared to the skill set of more of a man defense that Darby had played for the last couple of years?
Yeah, and I think when you look at the Ronald Darby situation, I don't know it was so much the Bills deciding to trade Ronald Darby as much as it was the Eagles coming and saying, we need some man cover guys, because they drafted Douglas from West Virginia that they hope will become a really good man player, man coverage guy. They drafted Sidney Jones, who really hasn't recovered yet from an injury he suffered in a pre-combine workout with an Achilles. So I think he's still on the PUP list. So they need some man cover guys, and they were looking for them. And I think they saw in the Bills saying, we're not going to play the same scheme that they played last year under Rex and Rob Ryan, and we're going to be more of a zone cover team. There's different skill set that's engaged between man coverage and zone coverage. Yeah, and with a man coverage, you're really focused on that receiver only. You got to have tremendous quickness and reaction skills. You got to understand how to play on the hip of that receiver, but you don't necessarily have to understand the entire schematic of the defense. Now, when you're a zone guy, you've got to know, when you're man, sometimes you need to know where your help is, but so depending on what side you're on. But in zone, you definitely need to know where your help is. You need to know what type of leverage control you need on a particular receiver. If there's a number one receiver who's considered the widest guy from the football on your side of the field, and if you're an outside defender, you've got to have outside leverage on that player. You've got to know who's got the inside leverage. You've got to be able to squeeze in particular situations depending on where the quarterback's going. Your trigger point for breaking on the football is more the quarterback and where your vision is than it is the receiver and what the receiver's doing, because you're not even looking at the receiver. You see the receiver, but you're responsible for an area. Then you know where your help is. And then you need to, obviously, you need to drive on the ball. You need to be, you're probably going to have to tackle more, because when you're playing man coverage, you've got that guy man-to-man, and the other 10 guys on the field are worried about making the tackle on a running back coming out in your area. But in the zone situation, you're going to have specific responsibilities in the running game, whether you're going to force that ball back carrier back inside or whether you're going to come up in a cutback lane and make a tackle. All those things are typically foreign to an outside corner when they come into the league. And now you put a corner who's really good, you take them from the outside and you put them on the inside. When they're in the inside, they've got to play much more like a wheel linebacker, which takes some time to get up to speed in that situation.
With Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, talking about tonight's game. Among players to keep an eye on tonight, I know we are both interested in watching rookie quarterback Nathan Peterman, who will be the second quarterback in, get a chance to play with the twos, and probably get, when it's all said and done, probably get more snaps than either of the other two quarterbacks on the roster.
Yeah, I would hope there's some good production from the first team offense, and Tyrod maybe pick up a few third downs this week. Last week they were not as favorable as they'd like on third down. I mean, I only picked up one or two throughout the course of the game, but they were converting some first downs in earlier downs in first and second down when they were throwing the ball downfield. Jonathan Williams was running really effectively, but Nathan Peterman certainly showed himself well. I mean, the toss to Tywan Jones in the flat arguably could have tied the game up had he not looked downfield before he had the ball secured, or if he would have just caught it and stepped out of bounds, probably would have had the first down. But I like the poise that he exhibited. I like the way he ran the offense. I like the fact that he didn't seem like he was frustrated with the situation, being at a deficit, knew that he could take the team and move them down the field, put them in scoring position. And I think some of his teammates have said he really has a mature presence about him for a young player. Maybe that's the reason he was able to knock off Clemson last year when the University of Pittsburgh played them.
And biggest game of
their
his
only
life.
Loss last year. But he certainly does seem like he has some poise. And T.J. Yates has been a guy who's been in this league for a number of years and certainly can be a mentor to both he and Tyrod in those situations. But seems like he's kind of elevated himself to that number two spot. Let's see if he can have as good an outing this evening as he had last week.
Mark, are there any others on the roster, offense or defense, that you are particularly interested in following tonight in this second preseason game?
Well, I'm interested, like everybody, in Reggie Ragland, because it does take a long time to come back from that injury. Most players, when they come back from that injury, it takes more than 12 months. It's only been 12 months as of about a week and a half ago for Reggie. So I want to see what's going on in that situation. Ramon Humbert continues to man that spot at the Will linebacker position. I think he's a really good player. Sometimes he gets tied up. When you're at the line of scrimmage, when he would rush on the outside or line up as a Sam linebacker, sometimes he gets swallowed up by bigger offensive linemen. At the Will position, he can use his speed and his elusiveness to avoid those guys, get back in a running lane. So I'm interested to see how that unfolds. And then I want to see if Gerald Hodges gets some snaps at a middle linebacker spot as well, because I think they really like Matt Milano right now. He's listed third on the depth chart. And I think they probably want to slide him into number two so that they could use him on special teams, because he seems like he can be a really special, effective special teamer. And then I don't think I think the safety position is kind of set. They know who are going to start. The guys are going to start the season as the starters. But I think they need more time together as an entire secondary unit so they can play seamlessly and make sure when one guy moves, they're all moving to best defend the passing attack of the opposition.
Those 10 penalties assessed against Buffalo last Thursday, cause for concern or
yeah,
not?
Well, I mean, some of them were aggressive penalties. I mean, I think they called Incognito on a hold, and the play that Trey Elston made when he knocked down that ball, and he put his hand on the back of the receiver. They're going to call that every time, even though I don't think it's interference, because I'm going to side with the defensive back. But they're going to call it. So, yes, it is cause for concern. Have got to eliminate those penalties. But no offside penalties on the defensive side of the ball, no false start penalties. So those are the ones that you really look for that cause problems down the road, and they did not have any of those more aggressive penalties.
Mark, I'm looking forward to the game tonight. I can't
wait. I am too. It's exciting to see it, and looking forward to calling it, and looking forward to this whole offseason or preseason process unfolding so we can see what the 53-man is going to look like.
Yeah, Donald and Jeremy, you know how you can tell it's game day. We are, what, five and a half hours away from kickoff, and Mark Kelso is already ready. A collared shirt, tie, hard-soled shoes. He's ready to go. Five and a half, 6 hours before kickoff. It's
ready to go. Ready to go. I don't like these night games when you have so much time in between. I might even have to walk to Lincoln Memorial or Lincoln Field, right?
Lincoln Memorial. That's a heck of
Lincoln,
a walk.
Yeah, Lincoln Memorial.
Back to you guys in Buffalo, Orchard Park.
That's right.
Oh, man. Thanks, Murph. Yeah, we were talking about Kelso and his suit already. He's already – I mean
– I'm the same way. If I've got somewhere to be, I'll just get dressed and sit around and wait for it.
In a suit, though? See, I sweat too much. I think I was supposed to be a fat boy, you know?
Maybe not a suit, but – yeah, I'll drive places and sit in the parking lot and wait for the time. Yeah, I'm early, not late.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I literally hate being late. But, you know, something like 30 minutes maybe early, something like that, I can do. But he's dressed already. It's 1:21, and the game is not until 7 p.m. I mean, I know the buses leave at around 2, and they're going to get to the stadium probably. They get to the stadium fast. It's always weird when the buses go to the stadium and you watch, like, the cops are on their bikes and they're flying through and they're stopping everybody and everybody's like, who is that? People are bad. And then when they see it's a team from the other town, everybody's like giving you the middle fingers and stuff.
When they put the itinerary out for players, I learned this through working for Niagara Hockey. Mm-hmm. When it lists like breakfast is at 9 a.m., mm-hmm. that really means it's 8:30 because everyone gets there and eats. Right. And when the bus leaves at 4:45, it's kind of like the Tom Coughlin rule.
Yeah.
It'll be bus at 4:45 and everyone's downstairs like 4:15.
Yeah,
like people are just maybe anxious. You're like, you got something important. You don't want to miss it.
Yeah, you know, when it says the bus is leaving at 4:45, the doors are closing and the bus is pulling off at 4:45. So you need to be down there a little bit earlier than that or you're going to miss the bus. I missed a bus once. I forgot where we were. We might have been in Kansas City. And I came downstairs for breakfast. I didn't really sleep much the night before. I came downstairs for breakfast, and I'm like, man, I'm tired. And I went back upstairs and lay back down. And next thing you know, my eyes they were shut. And thankfully I set a bunch of alarms. And the alarm woke me up. And now I'm in panic mode. And I look at my itinerary and I'm like, oh, I missed two buses. And I'm on the media bus on the way to the stadium. All of the teammates, my teammates are already there warming up. And I'm on the media bus. Everybody in the media is looking at me like, what are you doing on this bus?
Did you get in trouble?
I didn't get in trouble. But
as long as you make it there, like, whatever.
As long as I'm there by the time the team is warming up together.
Yeah.
You know, but I had to get dressed a little faster. Stevie, on the other hand, always got on the first bus. Stevie would be in the stadium literally sleeping on the floor in the locker room, knocked out. And I'm like, Steve, what are you doing, man? He's like, oh, I was tired. Like, come on, man. Wake up. We got a game coming up.
I can't get enough Stevie Johnson stories. I'm telling you.
Oh, Stevie, they're the best. I'm telling you.
You just keep telling me Stevie Johnson stories as much as you want. I love Stevie.
Stevie was like, he was a different dude, you know, and you really had to know him to understand him. He liked to have fun, but he didn't talk to many people. You know, he didn't trust anybody. He doesn't talk to many people. But it's fun to be around him if you really know him. You know, he's fun. Marshawn was the same way. You know, Marshawn he's the best teammate like I've ever had. Marshawn is the best dude, always joking to the point where you're like, stop, dude. Like, you play too much. Like, please just stop. In the locker room, throwing stuff at you. He wants to wrestle. Like, he and Fred Jackson together. And then Corey McIntyre. Those three guys were just the worst.
Did it take the right kind of coach to handle that, to deal with that?
Like, yeah.
Some are good with that and some –
Yeah, well, you know, typically in the locker room, coaches are not in the locker room. So right. They don't know what's going on in the locker room. But everywhere else, they couldn't handle Marshawn. Like Chan Gailey and the staff, Buddy Nix, they didn't like it. You know, Marshawn was the type of guy, he'd say what he wants to say, doesn't care who he's talking to. Like, I'm Marshawn Lynch, I don't care, you know. He came late. His phone would ring in meetings, you know. I remember one time his phone rang in a meeting. And what happens is, as soon as the phone rings, everybody, all of the players in the meeting, they go trying to like cover it up, right? Just trying to hide it. And Chan is like, yeah, that's a fine. And Marshawn was like, I don't care if it's a fine. Like, he just started going off on Chan. And I'm sitting there, I'm a rookie still. And I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. I've never seen a guy. I'm coming from college. And I still had that respect for a coach. And I'm like, this is the league now. Like, dudes actually go off on the coaches. That's a little bit different, you know? And then I started to see it all the time.
Yeah.
But
and you have some coaches that try to stop that and others that kind of know I got to work with this. I might not like it, but I got to find a way to make it work for me.
We were, Murph and I were talking about receivers and having diva mentalities because of Anquan Boldin saying that, you know, we don't have any divas in the room, whatever he was referring to. I don't think he was trying to take a shot at Sammy. He wasn't here long enough to even know how Sammy was. But we were talking about that, and I was telling Murph how Steve Smith and Brandon Marshall are and how those guys will walk off the field, say whatever they want to say. And it's like, we got to deal with this. Like, this dude produces for us on Sundays, you know. So some coaches and organizations, they just learn to deal with certain guys for a certain amount of time, and then they say forget that.
That happens with coaches too, right? If a coach wears on the players, you deal with it. If he's a good coach for long enough,
you deal with it.
And then we see this more in hockey where teams fire coaches left and right. You know, a coach – wears out his welcome, and he's like, all right, you're out of here.
You're out of here.
We dealt with it for a while because we were winning, and now we're mad at you. You're out.
You're out, and that's how it goes. On the other side, 1:30, Murph is going to be standing alongside Steve Tasker, who will be calling the game on CBS with Andrew Ketelon. Steve flew down with the team, so he's down there. He'll be standing in alongside with Murph. That's coming up at 1:30. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Donald Jones, sitting in with Jeremy White. Jeremy, we were talking, and we're going to get out to Murph and Steve Tasker in a second, but we were talking off air about Stevie Johnson and how fun it was to be around him and Marshawn and all those guys. And the question I have for you, who was the best interview that you had? Like a guy that you were like, I love interviewing this dude.
Consistently, trying to think. Fred Jackson. We used to have Fred Jackson on in the mornings, and Fred was good. His first year, Doug Marrone was a great interview.
Really?
Year one, Doug Marrone was a great interview. Year two, not as much. And one of my best ever, actually, that I ever did was Andrew Peters. Andrew Peters, I don't even know how long ago, 6-7 years ago, Howard was out, and I had Andrew come in for maybe an hour, hour and a half, and we just had – just a great talk just about everything. So anybody that's really willing to, you know, open up and just be themselves, which Stevie, that's what you're describing, right?
Exactly.
A guy who is maybe not necessarily doing it for the media all the time, but a guy who's just real and will just tell you who he is and what he thinks.
Yeah. Well, we all know that's Andrew Peters.
Right.
Andrew does it on the show, on the Instigators.
And that's like that's how you knew he'd probably be pretty good at that.
Exactly.
Is because he's just going to – he'll just tell you what he thinks.
Well, we got another guy on, Steve Tasker. He's standing alongside Murph down in Philadelphia. Steve will tell you a little bit about, you know, what he thinks and what he cares about and all of that stuff as well. Steve is good with that. So we're going to shoot it back down to Murph down in Philadelphia. Murph, Steve, how you guys doing?
Hey, Donald, we're doing great. Donald and Jeremy, thanks very much. This guy, I've been interviewing this guy for 30 years. He's one of my favorite guys to interview. I never get tired of talking to you. I don't know what that is.
Well, that's nice. I'll take that in a nice way.
I mean it in a nice way. Yeah. Okay. Hey, you're breaking in another play-by-play guy this weekend, of course.
I'm breaking. I did his first game ever in the booth with
did
CBS.
Really?
Yeah, a handful of years ago. He got one game because of a snafu in the schedule. I did Andrew's first game, and now he's a regular. He's great.
He's big time.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Andrew Catalan. We had him on earlier. It'll be Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, Mike Catalana on the field tonight for the Bills and the Eagles, 7 o'clock kickoff. You can see it on WKBW-TV, Channel 7 in Buffalo, on 13 WAM-TV in Rochester, and WTBH in Syracuse. And you get through that first preseason game. The late Van Miller used to say this. Said, Murph, once that first one's over, then they really start coming. And I kind of feel that now. We're in a routine, and the games are going to be stacked up here now over the next 3 weeks. It gets kind of exciting.
Yeah, and you can start to see the identity of each team kind of unfold, and you find out, you know, which guys are going to be surprises, pleasant surprises and disappointments, and you get teams that are going to be surprises, much like the Atlanta Falcons last year, although they were good before that. They busted out last year. It's fun to watch that take place and transpire, and then, you know, everybody's got their own favorite team, and up here we watch and follow the Buffalo Bills, and a lot of new and moving parts that happen during the regular during the preseason and the offseason. It's going to be fun to see them come together.
Should be a lot of action tonight for Nathan Peterman, second quarterback through the rotation.
Yeah.
Probably going to play close to a quarter and a half, maybe a little bit longer. And a lot of people are excited about what he has shown and maybe the potential that's there.
Yeah, it's funny because you and I talk, and Sal Capaccio and Andrew and Mark Kelso, all the media guys that follow the team, were kind of interested to see Peterman play. He played pretty well last week. Yeah, his numbers weren't gaudy. It was like, 12 for 25, 13 for 25, something like that. But he kept on the field. He put together a nice long 13-play drive. The club was in and out of the huddle fast. Yeah. Even when he broke the huddle. I was watching the game again. 5 seconds on the play clock. Still gets the playoff, gets the snap. Although he ended the game with the ball being snapped over his shoulder, was kind of – yeah, there's a couple of bad plays there where the Vikings were sending some pressure late, kind of ended things on a bad note. He still played pretty well when he had control of it and when he was protected. So, he's very intriguing. Guys are going to want to watch him play. And along with, Anquan Boldin tonight, we're going to get our first look at him. Zay Jones is going to be in there. Andre Holmes, I think, is going to be. And I think the wide receiving core is a huge question mark. There's nobody's left over from last year.
Back to Peterman for a second. If he should play well tonight, maybe continue to play well and become the number two, what does that mean for T.J. Yates?
Well, it means, I think it means he's just number three. I mean, I from what I've heard, I think he's a really good voice. He and Tyrod, because T.J.'s had so much history in this offense, it's good for a starting quarterback to have a guy who he can turn around to and start having a high-level conversation about what he's thinking without having to explain the offense and what he's talking about and wait for a rookie to catch up with him, a guy like Peterman. I mean, T.J. Yates will be able to speak the language of Tyrod Taylor when he's got quick, high-level questions or conversations he wants to have about what he's thinking in the pocket about the offense, how he's looking at, what he's looking at, why they call the play, what are they looking at. When they call this play, what coverage are they trying to beat? And if we don't get it, where's our first go-to? You know, what am I looking for? And can I change one of the routes on the backside? All that kind of stuff that I just rattled off really has a depth of meaning for these two guys because they know the plays. They know what they're trying to do, and he needs, and Sean McDermott told me, Tyrod likes having T.J., that T.J. is a good voice for him because he does understand the offense and can have snap answers for those kind of things. And when they start talking, it straightens Tyrod's train of thought out on the next play. So it's good to have T.J. Yates around because of that. Whether he's the two or three is irrelevant because if Tyrod's not in there, you know, your team's going to be hamstrung because their starting quarterback's out anyway. So whoever's in there is number two, whoever gives you the best chance to win. And then a guy like Peterman's got two voices, Tyrod and T.J., who can come in and say, hey, okay, think about this and kind of simplify things for him.
Talking with Steve Tasker, he will call the game tonight on the Bills Television Network along with Andrew Catalan and Mike Catalan of the Bills and the Philadelphia Eagles. We are live in Philadelphia getting set for tonight's kickoff at 7 o'clock. You mentioned the receiver battle. I wonder, one of the components of a backup wide receiver you would think is helping in the return game. Bills got to look at Rashard Ross and Brandon Tate last week, neither one of whom jumped off the page. where are they getting their return work from? I mean, is it Tate's job by default right now? And what did you think of the return game in general?
I think so. You'd have to talk to Danny Cross about what he's thinking. There may be a wild card that they can throw in there late. And I think you'll finally probably get a look at him in games 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the return guys you get looked at in 3 and 4, bubble guys who can maybe say, okay, well, if he can return, we can hang on to him and
right.
stuff. But I think Tate's the guy that it has to be. You have to trust the most right now. He's got experience at wide receiver. He can come in and play. And also, he's a good return guy, reliable return man. You know, I mean, he's not Devin Hester, you know, or he's not Gale Sayers. And if you want to go back, you know, he's not either Deion Sanders, any
right.
of those guys. But he's certainly a guy that, and I told you this, and you kind of laughed at me when I told you, hey, when the play's over and we've got the ball after a return, it's a win. You know, the worst thing that can possibly happen is getting a guy who's, you know, maybe we've got the ball and maybe it ends up on the
yeah.
ground and they're going the other way. But basically, a guy like Tate, you can trust that that's never going to be a problem.
I laughed because I thought back to the old Wade Phillips. He's a punt catcher, not
yeah.
a punt returner.
It gives kind you more of
sounds
than
that. Like
that. Well, Tate gives you more than that. I mean, no question. Plus, he's got a lot of confidence back there. And believe me, for a guy who's done it, the hardest part about it is before you catch the ball. Do you catch it? Do you fair catch it? Do you call poison? Is it a good punt? Is it a bad punt? Where am I on the field? Do I have room to catch this? When do I call a fair catch? How late can I wait to make sure it's a good fair catch? You know, because then after you get the ball, then it's all instinct. I mean, I'm going to run to where I see daylight. I don't need to think about anything. I just need to react. So it's really one of those, and I've said it's the worst job in football because the entire team can be playing fantastic football,
right.
and you can lose the game for them. So, you need a guy back there you can trust.
On the topic of returns, because of the changes in the rules, you know, the move the kickoff line up and now the 25-yard touchback, maybe what we're seeing is a diminishment of the importance of return games. And
yeah,
maybe
no
not
question.
We're kind of laser-focused on the Bills, but maybe this is going on all around the league. Return specialists are really not of that much value anymore?
Well, certainly kickoff return guys are, I think, not as valuable because there's so few opportunities. And if it was me, I mean, unless I've got a guy like one of the ones I mentioned, one of the all-time great return guys, I just tell him, listen, you keep it in the end zone. I don't care if it's 1 yard deep or at the goal line. You cover it in the end zone. We'll take it on the 25. You get out to the 20, pass to the 25 on a return. That's a successful return back in the day. And I don't think that's changed too much. I think it's a reliable guy that you can get to the 25-yard line. If you caught it at the goal line and got to the 25 every time during the season, you're winning. You know, you're winning those plays. So just take it. Don't risk any – particularly don't risk any injury, and you certainly don't risk a late turnover or coughing it up. So unless the ball lands out in the field of play, I'd tell my guys just, hey, stay in the end zone. We'll take it on the 25, and we'll put our best guy with his hands on the ball on the field.
Speaking of rules and the administration of the game, the Bills and the rest of the league played its first game with the new replay system last week. The Bills had a challenge, didn't go their way, but it did seem like a little bit, I don't know, faster, a little bit more efficient to bring the tablet out. And even though the call's not being made on the field anymore, it's centralized replay. I can see how this might work, and we saw a little bit of it last week.
Yeah, we saw a little of it last week, and we talked about it. I said on the broadcast I was going to ask Sean McDermott if it was just, listen, they wanted to some point they were going to challenge one no matter what, and that's exactly what it was. He really didn't believe he was going to win it, but he wanted to go through the protocols and have his staff go through, you know, the communication process to get it out and get the word to him that they wanted to challenge it. They did it, and it went fine for them. But on to your point, the game last week seemed to drag late on. It was still a game that lasted less than 3 hours.
Right.
That's what the league is really shooting for, a three-hour football game. And if they can do that, the league is going to be happy. And if these rules and these changes with the replay that really don't affect the fan experience that much, except for the fact that the duration of the game, if they get that game down to a three-hour window, you can bet they'll get the hammer and chisel out and start carving them into granite because they don't want to change that at all. It'll never change from that three-hour window.
Well, this is on the top of my mind because I spent a little time last night. There was a rules video that went out to players and coaches. I watched it last night, and the front end of it was about celebrations. They have relaxed the celebration rule, which is a big issue for my partner back there in Orchard Park, Donald Jones. But I think this is good. I think they're headed in the right direction. You know, you can use the football as a prop. You can have spontaneous choreographed celebration for more than one. Not a big issue, but I think as far as fan enhancement, a lot of people, as Donald has pointed out over and over and over again, a lot of people like to see the dancing and the celebrations.
Well, it all stems from genuine happiness, believe me. And these guys, you know, it's part of the camaraderie of being on a team. You get to celebrate together when you're successful. And I'm not a huge fan of it. One of the things that I had a problem with later was, well, like you take a guy like Cam Newton. Not too many guys had a problem with it. But his celebration for a while, they're back in their Super Bowl year 2 years ago. It was going on and on and on. It never quit. So that's when it gets to be a problem. But if it's quick, spontaneous, even if it's choreographed and it takes about a half, 2 seconds, nobody really has a problem with it. And as long as this has nothing to do with your disrespecting your opponent, I don't have a problem with it.
Last thing, Steve, they have changed the cutdown date. There's only one cutdown, the cut to 53. It's still a couple of weeks away, September 2nd. And I do think they're going to keep a lot of guys around to play preseason game number 4. Do you anticipate maybe they'll start to bleed off some of the players off the roster between now and September 2nd?
Or? You might, and you might even see them sign a couple of guys late to see if they can churn the bottom of their roster and get some elevated play, or particularly if they get a couple of injuries and those guys probably weren't going to make the team anyway. They'll bring some guys on to see, maybe they can flash, maybe they can play some special teams, and maybe we'll keep them around for a few weeks in the regular season to also try them out at the bottom of the roster. So you may see a lot of that, but not very much. All of that's possible, whether they sign players late, even for a couple of days, give them a couple of practices, and then send them packing, or hang on tight to everybody. Sure. And then I think the best way to handle it, for players' perspective, they need to know right where they stand. The coaching staff, the position coaches, the head coach says, hey, you in particular, if you play well this game, you got a chance. Or if you do this game, or if things go well this game. Give them the exact parameters as much as they can about what it's going to take for each player to make it. That's what a player craves.
Have a great broadcast tonight. Thank you for
this.
You
too, Murph. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Steve Tasker is going to be on the TV side with Andrew Catalan and Mike Catalana. Channel 7 in Buffalo on WHAM 13 TV in Rochester, WTVH in Syracuse, 7 o'clock for the Bills and the Eagles. We've got the radio call at 7 o'clock with our pregame show starting at 5 o'clock on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Should be a great night for football. 85 and sunny, a little breezy right here on our pool deck on the east side of Center City, Philadelphia. And the forecast calling for about 79, 80 degrees tonight. Chance of thunder showers a little bit later in the night, but not impacting the game. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll send it back to the studio to Donald and Jeremy. Fellas, take it away.
Thank you, Murph. Thank you, Steve.
Yes. We can fix everything here. Next year, schedule a preseason game with the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Do it at the pool,
right,
at the stadium.
That's what I'm talking about.
Perfect.
That's perfect.
Two birds, one stone.
I might have to go down there with them, though. You might have to fill in for everybody.
I'll be up here. You guys will be on the pool deck.
Isn't it like the top deck of that stadium down in Jacksonville?
Like, guys, it's the second quarter. That's cool. That's fine. We can see the game from here. We're at the pool.
I know, right? I don't want to call anything. I want to stay in the pool. But thank you to Steve Tasker. Thank you, Mark Kelso. Thank you for Andrew Catalan for joining. Murph, we're done with Murph today. It's just you and me for the rest of the show.
All right.
We got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about it in our next segment and at the top of the hour. We got a lot to go over here. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Reed's Gins brings you the Diamond in the Rough. This week is defensive end Eddie Yarborough. Yarborough signed with the Bills in April after spending his first training camp in Denver last season. He's been very impressive during this year's camp, working his way into the first team reps after beginning third team. Yarborough continued his great play in the Bills' first preseason game, getting the start against the Vikings, sacking quarterback Sam Bradford, and pressuring all Vikings quarterbacks. Eddie Yarborough, this week's Diamond in the Rough, presented by Reed's Gins, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills.
Quick thing on Eddie Yarborough for you. So we talked to him at training camp. You were asking me who the best players to interview were. Give me a couple more segments with Eddie Yarborough, and I might change my mind. He's got a lot to say. Mm-hmm. I was warned of that at the start of camp. Like, root for this guy, because if he starts to make a name for himself, he's a great interview. So he was talking about his time at Wyoming. He went to Wyoming, where Josh Allen is.
Yep.
And he's talking about how they didn't really cross paths too much. I think Allen was on the scout team when Yarborough in his last season. And he said the coaching staff said to them, like I don't know how it works. You don't really hit the scout team quarterback, right?
You don't hit him.
Yeah,
you don't hit him.
You're going to rush him.
Yeah.
But the coach was basically like, be careful with this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is an NFL arm over there. Gotcha. So just, be a little careful. Like, Wyoming, the coaches know. You know, when this guy gets his time, he's legit. And you could probably tell that in college, right? You know the guys that are, this dude is going to go.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can tell a kid that's above everyone else when they're young. You know, this kid is an unbelievable athlete. If he works hard, he'll make it. And then once you get to high school, you have certain kids like, this dude is really good. When you get to college, you can see the guys that are above everybody else. Like, you can see it. This dude is going somewhere. If he stays healthy, he is going to be a dude in the league. Like, he's going to go high, get drafted high, and he's going to be something. So, yeah, you can see that, especially with quarterbacks.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of fun to do, like, whether it's high school or college, if you turn on a game knowing, hey, look for this guy. He's supposed to be better than everybody else. And then when that guy lives up to that in that game, I did a sweet home game against maybe St. Joe's a couple years ago, and I'm not going to remember the players. I forget who they were. But one was going to, and I'll find out maybe in this break. Someone can text me or tweet me. One was going to Notre Dame. One was going to Penn State on opposite teams. And it was like, watch this game. These guys are going D1. Yeah. And right away, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's always – now, for me, on the flip side of that, when I go to a game or I turn on a game expecting, like, I'm looking for this guy. I want to see this guy play. And then all of a sudden you see somebody else jump off the screen.
Yeah.
And it's like, who is that dude? Is that you know dude that, is good, too.
You know who did that with me was when Phillip Rivers was at NC State. Mm-hmm. And it was he's supposed to be, like, a second-round pick, and I wanted the Bills to take quarterback. So I'm all about watching Phillip Rivers.
Yeah.
Immediately, it's like, Jericho Cotchery can play.
Yeah.
And he had a good long career. He's still playing, I think.
He might have just finished up.
Go get Jericho Cotchery.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy that can play.
Jericho's a good dude. And he was a solid receiver, which is, I think Coach McDermott talked about, you know, why, another reason why he brought in Anquan Boldin, because it reminds him of Jericho Cotchery. Now, not the same production, but just leadership in the room. When Jericho came into that room, especially when they lost Kelvin Benjamin the year they went to the Super Bowl, Jericho was huge for the young receivers, guys like Philly Brown in that room that had to step up now, Ted Ginn, and had to step up and make plays. Jericho was huge for them, and that's another reason, well, one of the main reasons why they brought in Anquan Boldin. He's going to be a help to a lot of these young receivers. But I love to see guys that will jump off the screen that you're not expecting to see, you know, and that's a great thing for me.
Yeah, it's a good reason to go in college, especially want to play with, if you're a receiver, with a good team, good quarterback, or a high profile, even if it's not necessarily your guy, but, you know, power conferences to get seen more often, you're more likely to get seen, and you just need the right scout in the building on the right day, and you get noticed.
You'll definitely get noticed. Eddie Yarbrough got noticed, but he got cut last year. It's looking like he's going to stick this year, you know, and sat out all last year. I heard he was doing media for, like, Mountain West Conference. He was doing, like, sideline reporting and stuff like that. So he's one of those guys, like you talked about with Petey. You can tell he's at some point he's going to be good if he gets into the media. He'll be good at it because he does. I mean, he smiles a lot. He lights up the room when he comes in. I look forward to watching him play tonight and all throughout the season because I think he has a spot on lock. So we're going to get to another break. When we get back, we're going to get into a lot of different things. Tonight's game, replay stuff. The Cowboys, there's a lot that we have
and
to talk about.
Your perfect three-receiver set.
My perfect three-receiver set we have to talk about as well. Since we're talking about who's going to play what on this Bills team, what receivers are going to play what positions. So we're going to talk about that and more. It's the John Murphy Show. We're live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it.
Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod Brooks.
Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone.
Boy, much to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show. Presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Donald Jones. Jeremy White sitting in, filling in for everyone as the team is down in Philadelphia getting ready. We're about, 5 hours away from the game tonight. Big game for a lot of guys on this team. They're down in Philadelphia getting ready to play the Philadelphia Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field. I think Kelso said Lincoln Memorial. Definitely not the Lincoln Memorial. And a guy that you were talking about who everybody's going to be watching, Nathan Peterman. Now, Nathan Peterman had a good game at home last week. This is going to be his first game on the road. So what should we expect out of a guy in a hostile environment? I don't care if it's regular season, preseason, doesn't matter. The Philadelphia fans are crazy. What do you think we'll see out of him?
Well, I was looking at this. Pro Football Focus – ranked him just below Jimmy Garoppolo in their opening game. They gave Garoppolo a grade of like 83, and they gave Peterman an 83 also, just underneath. And Garoppolo had a really nice opening to his preseason. So Peterman impressed people that were not just Bills fans, people that watched a lot of the games, you know, whether or not you like Pro Football Focus. So what will be different? I mean, you're not getting the full deal of Philadelphia, but you're on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So as a player, even if it's preseason, what is different about that,
right,
about being in a different spot?
Preseason for a rookie, you know, there's a lot. I was talking to Ruben about this, just traveling with the team, first of all, you know, going through the whole hotel process and having to travel with the team, flying on the plane, all of that stuff is different. And then going into a different stadium, a different locker room that somewhere that's different that you haven't been since you got drafted here, you know. And typically they put you in. Now, he would be used to this because especially the big colleges are like this, but typically in the league, they put you in horrible locker rooms when you're the away team. You know, they put you in locker rooms that are really small. You're cramped up. Sometimes you got to share a locker with somebody else. So it's just weird, you know. I'm not really sure. Welcome back to the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We were talking a little bit about Nathan Peterman and being on the road. This is his first road game, and I was getting into, you know, him, just this process and how it's different from being at home. Now he's on the road in a different environment, hostile environment, dealing with those fans. When he walks in the stadium, the fans are going to let him hear it. You know, that's going to be something that he has to deal with. When he walks into the locker room, that locker room is going to be small. It's going to be tight. Just the entire process from start to finish, from having to look, this is what time you got to be at the plane before the plane took off yesterday. That entire process is something that you have to get used to. Not that he's not used to. He came from two big programs. Big programs where he's played in hostile environments itself, but this is the league. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. When you see Peterman, when you watch him play, strengths include timing, right? Mm-hmm. He looked pretty decisive with the ball, looked like he gets his drop. I mean, I'm not a football scout, but just watch him. He looks like he's got a fairly determined motion. Like, the scouting report on him was he doesn't have the strongest arm.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, what we've seen of him, at least in the preseason, they haven't asked him to make big long throws. It was kind of quick hits,
right,
and that might be what this offense really is. So you know, you can audition when you're being scouted by 32 NFL teams. They're all looking at what you would do in their offense. If you find an offense that suits what he does, they'd have a higher grade on him than somebody that's going to ask for a big downfield passing game, I would think.
Exactly, and this offense I think fits what he does. West Coast principles. You know, and the fact of the matter is, I don't know how much it fits Tyrod Taylor's game, because Tyrod Taylor's, I mean, and I know they're trying to improve his timing, but this is a timing-based offense. And Nathan Peterman, because he doesn't have the strongest arm, has always had to rely on making sure he gets the ball out on time, throws it before guys get into their breaks, different things like that. You know, people would say he's a game manager. And for me, here in Buffalo, with the strong running game, if you have a guy who is a game manager, I don't really care. As long as you don't turn the ball over and you actually distribute the ball around and get it out on time, I'm totally fine with that. It seems like that's what he does.
Well, it seems like that's what the plan has been. Like, you get a guy like that while you're waiting for someone that's going to be, you know, that can do the full range of things you need him to do. I wonder about turnovers in this offense. So the previous regimes, you know, Greg Roman, Anthony Lynn, those offenses spent a lot of time throwing the ball to the outside, and that's one of the strengths that Tyrod has. Yeah. He's got a good, strong arm, and he's accurate down the field on the sidelines. And it looks like this offense is not going to be a lot of that.
Right.
Like, it might be more of Tyrod rolls out, and there's going to be level one, level two, level three kind of throws, and he'll have to either choose based on the defense or based on what he sees. Could that lead to more interceptions, but also more touchdowns?
Yeah.
I would trade, you know, a bunch more touchdowns for a couple more, a bunch more interceptions, to be honest. I'm not as afraid of turning the ball over if I've got the kind of offense that I know can score.
Yeah, I think Tyrod, in his mind, from when he was little, was taught don't turn the ball over.
Every quarterback to a degree is.
Every quarterback to a degree is. I think for some reason that's in his mind. And so I don't know what it is, why he won't really make those throws down the middle of the field. I think this offense – is going to be a little bit different in terms of him actually play action, roll out, or half roll out types of things. Different, like you said, different levels of receivers, the tight ends, crossing in the middle of the field, all of that stuff can, I guess, help him out. He's going to have to get deep in his drops and really just – he still has to get the ball out on time, you know. So it can lead to more touchdowns. And I remember last year, and I've been saying it since I've, you know, come on this show, a guy like Charles Clay who caught 50-plus passes last year, if you get him the same amount of catches but different type of catches where he's catching the ball over the middle on the move, you know, and deep crossers and different things like that, he can actually make plays for you. But yeah, if everything you're running is curl routes and hitches and things to the outside, he's not going to catch the ball and run, you know. And that's something that I think that they would want to do more of this year. Tyrod has a strong enough arm to make any throw. He just has to have the confidence to make the throws down the middle of the field. I think we're going to see a lot of action in the middle of the field with a guy like Anquan Boldin and Charles Clay as they're, you know, they're running different crossers and underneath type of routes that really get one of those guys open. Tyrod still has to be on time. He still has to throw the ball, be accurate, and get the ball out in front so that they can catch the ball and run. That's something right. We didn't see out of him last year. He would throw behind them.
Yards after catch, the Bills, if they weren't 31st or they were 32nd or like bottom 2-3 in yards after catch per reception.
Right.
And that can be a couple things. It can be, and I'll ask you, like, what percentage of that is the type of routes they run? And what percentage of that is, you know, if a guy does break and he's got an opportunity to move, the ball's that half second late or just that half tick late that allows the defense to converge on the open player? Because it has been a problem that these receivers, they can get open, he can get the ball to them, but not at an appropriate time so that they can make the most out of that play.
You know, it's always hard for me to tell with Tyrod Taylor because I think ultimately he's just late on a lot of throws. I think he waits for guys to come open, and you have to throw guys open. And when you throw into areas and you throw into a spot and you anticipate, you're throwing it knowing that this guy is coming across the field, you make the throw, the guy can continue to run, catch the ball, and keep on going. But if you're standing there waiting for him to come open, and then you got to try to make a throw real fast, it's going to be behind him. And when the ball is behind, I mean, guys don't come wide open in this league often. Usually you have someone on your back or somebody's trailing you because the defense is getting paid to cover as well. So if you throw it behind you, you throw it behind me, I can catch it, but now I have to try to turn all the way around. There's no way with the guy trailing me who's fast, who's probably running 4.3, 4.4, that I can turn all the way back around and keep on going. You know, so you got to put it in front of me so that I can continue up the field.
One thing we saw a little bit in the last couple of years, I don't know, again, this is what I mean about like the difference between seeing a preseason offense and a regular season offense. They might roll out against the Jets and just show us all the stuff we haven't seen.
Yeah.
We have seen McCoy line up as a receiver in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
Is that going to happen this year?
I think Shady is going to line up in the slot quite often. And even outside, anytime you can see and offensive coordinators will do this on purpose. Anytime you can see anytime you motion a running back out, if a linebacker goes out with him, you know they're in man-to-man. So they do that stuff on purpose. If you motion a running back out and you just see the entire defense bump over, then you know they're in a zone. You know, so they'll do it on purpose just to see that. Or even put them in the slot and see who's covering them. You know, and if you get one-on-one, there's no linebacker that can cover Shady. He is a receiver. I mean, it's just the fact of the matter. There's no linebacker in this league that can cover him one-on-one consistently. I think you're going to see a lot more passes to him. He's going to line up at slot. He's going to line up outside and coming out of the backfield. I think a guy like Mike Tolbert is going to catch passes out of the backfield. Pat DeMarco will catch passes out of the backfield. They kind of make this offense versatile, you know, and it's not like last year with Jerome Felton where you knew when he was in, he was blocking. You weren't throwing him the ball out of the backfield. So this year is a little bit different.
Yeah, DeMarco and Tolbert don't seem to me like traditional fullbacks of yesteryear.
Right.
Particularly DeMarco, who never carries the ball and has frequently been a target in the passing game.
Yeah, that's weird.
That is very strange.
Like for you to never give this guy any touches and then you throw it to him and he catches it and scores, that's different.
It is. It's very odd. And with those two, and I've always felt that Charles Clay gives this team. I like the signing of Clay when they did it. I know that it hasn't panned out the way that maybe you want it to. The production hasn't been there. You've talked about like he's always catching hitches and curls. You know, when he's on the field, the way they used him, it helps them mask run or pass, and he's good.
Right.
So like he's been a weapon, and Greg Roman used to refer to him as the Swiss Army knife. He's still on this team, and if he's healthy, and I've got those fullbacks and Clay, who can make it look like I'm going to run the ball, play action was something the Bills did less frequently than every team in the league last year, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, the changes are not just roster. They're not just approach and scheme. We're going to see, I think, play action, which we haven't seen a lot in the last 2 years.
I think play action helps a guy like Tyrod because he's not as tall. And we've talked – you probably talked on your show about it. We've talked a lot on this show about it. People talk about it around here in Buffalo. He can't see over the line of scrimmage. He has to be able to see through these guys. I know out in Seattle, they do a lot of play action, right? And they get
and they
Russell
create lanes
Wilson. Yeah, they create lanes, and they get Russell Wilson deep in his drops so that the deeper in your drop New Orleans is like this as well. The deeper in the drop, he can see it a little bit better, you know, and those lanes can kind of open up. But he has to get back there quickly, get his head turned around so that he can see these guys come open.
And the other thing that does, if you're, like, deep in the drop and a defensive lineman, defensive end comes free, you know, it's one thing if it's Peyton Manning there, he's not going to move.
Yeah.
But if it's Tyrod Taylor and it's one-on-one, you still got a pretty good shot.
Right.
You know, get away from that guy and try and make something happen. So I wonder how much they're going to use Tyrod in read option, play actions that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are weapons on this team. The receivers – last year, I felt like their weapons were pretty good. This year, I mean, Anquan Boldin has had a borderline Hall of Fame career,
right.
So he's accomplished. Zay Jones, I don't really ever expect much from rookies just because rookie receivers, it's not that common, especially for second-round rookie receivers to come in and make a big impact. It doesn't mean you can't have a nice season.
Right.
Robert Woods in his rookie year came in and had a pretty good year. Like, mm-hmm. He showed up and he was like, oh, this guy's good. If Zay Jones had the exact same kind of year that Robert Woods had,
yeah.
I think we'd all take it.
Right.
Like, he showed up and he was good.
So, since we're talking about receivers and X, Y, and Z, we know we have Jordan Matthews. As soon as he gets, you know, healthy again and back on the field, I would think on this team, Jordan Matthews will be your X, Zay Jones will be your Z, and Anquan Boldin will be your Y. Anquan might be your Z, and Zay be the Y, but Anquan will line up in the slot.
When you break these, when you say these three letters, what's the difference between each? I mean, Z is generally the slot guy, the third guy, the inside guy. But X is supposed to be
X is
Mike Evans.
Yeah.
Like, who's the perfect X?
So, all right,
Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins is an X.
Perfect.
You know, your number one receiver typically is the X, but every offense is different. Now you have those digit-based offenses where whoever the X is lines up by itself all the time, you know, and then you have offenses like this one where you're going to see guys move around a lot, you know. Ultimately, the X is your number one guy. He's the guy that can go out there and be by himself and create plays on his own. If you need him to just run a comeback, he is that guy. If you need him to run deep down the field, he's that guy.
Beat double coverage.
Beat double
coverage.
They
roll coverage his side, he can beat it anyway.
That's typically your X. The Z is typically the second receiver on the team, the number two receiver. He usually lines up, you know, to the call side. The X is by itself. The Z lines up to the call side, and he usually works off of someone else to get open. The Z can also get open by itself if the X goes down or something like that. Your number two, your Z, should be able to play X as well. Now, he might not be as talented, but that's your Z. Y or H in some offenses is typically your slot receiver. And he just moves all around. He really is a Swiss Army knife. He moves around and does a lot of different things. In this offense, I would say Jordan will be your X because he's produced, he's proven, he still has some speed to him. I would think that Anquan – it's hard between Anquan and Zay to say who's going to be the Z and who's going to be the H or Y or whatever they're calling it in this offense just because both of those guys are like slot receivers. I do know that – Zay is faster, though, you know, than Anquan. Anquan's never been a fast receiver. He is a slot receiver. He can play outside, but later in his career, he is a slot guy, you know. So I would expect to see him play in the slot a lot more than we see Zay Jones in the slot.
Boldin, when they signed Boldin, I loved the signing. I've wanted Boldin on this team for a couple years. I mean, he was in Baltimore, Arizona first, and then, help me with this, Arizona, then Baltimore,
then
Detroit.
No, San Fran.
San Fran, yeah. Arizona, Baltimore, San Fran, Detroit, then here. And I've been pushing for Boldin since, it had to be maybe San Fran because he's been getting up there in age, kind of like the Jaromir Jagr of football. And just when every year it's like, maybe, you know, he'll finally slow down. And last year with Detroit, and that's a passing offense, it passes it all over the field.
Yeah.
Matthew Stafford, for my money, Matthew Stafford's one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch. He might not be the best, but he's just fun.
Yeah,
I love watching Matthew Stafford. Slings it all the time, and he, 8 touchdowns for Boldin and a red zone threat. Like, I, you know, yeah. he continues to defy the odds.
Definitely defying the odds. And we have some calls on the line. If you want to call in and let us know what you think about the game tonight, what you're looking forward to seeing, if you want to talk about quarterbacks, Nathan Peterman, Tyrod Taylor, anything you want to talk about, call us 803-0550 outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-552-550. We're going to go to Brad in Rochester, who has a question about Tyrod Taylor. Brad, how you doing?
Hey, guys. McDermott and Bean will never come out and say it. If Tyrod has a phenomenal year and plays great, he's not going to be in Buffalo next year regardless, correct or no?
I wouldn't say that. If he has a phenomenal year, I would say they might not expect it.
Yeah.
But no, I think they're absolutely open to the idea of, just like any fan, if you are friends with someone who doesn't think Tyrod's that good and then he goes out and throws 50 touchdowns,
right.
You're going to say to your friend, what do you think now?
I
think they might not bet on him being great, but I would think they're open to it.
It was kind of like last year. It's totally different, but still kind of like last year with Tony Romo out in Dallas, their entire situation, what happened with their quarterbacks. I mean, who expected – Right. Their quarterback is now. Nobody expected that, you know, and what happens? Tony Romo goes down, and then Dak comes in, and everybody's like, oh, man, you know, hopefully he can have a good season. And then he's tearing it up, and people are like, so are you going to – when Tony Romo is healthy again, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, and Dak just took over that spot, and now, you know, the rest is history. But who knows? If Tyrod is tearing it up, yeah, I think he would be here next year. If not – that's up in the air.
It is possible. I'm thinking like when the Chargers had Drew Brees and then drafted Phillip Rivers,
mm-hmm.
Brees had a good year after that. And ultimately, like it was already in place. They were going to move on.
Right.
So I guess it's possible. You know, the situation that would say you're moving on no matter what would be if they had already drafted the guy. Mm-hmm. Like if Mahomes has been drafted
right.
or Watson or Trubisky, one of those guys is on this team, and Tyrod's starting, you might say, no matter what, we know who our guy of the future is.
Right.
Right now, I mean, maybe that's Nathan Peterman. Maybe that's somebody in next year's draft. But, you know, as long as you're in a time when you're looking for your quarterback of the future,
right.
you're not going to rule anything out. You're just going to try and do the best you can to find one. And I think the Bills have kind of done that with the Watkins trade. That's a lot of fans instantly went to the ammunition you have.
Right.
You can move up. You can take a couple chances next year in the draft. If you don't have to,
mm-hmm.
great.
Now,
but, you know, you might plan on having to do that.
Here's the real question. And for me, I hope that Tyrod Taylor plays, especially in the passing game, better than he did last year. Let's just say he doesn't. Let's just say he plays what he did last year. Now, he was invited to, what, the last two Pro Bowls. If he plays like he did last year, and let's just say this team ends up in the playoffs with Tyrod playing like he did last year, still being in the passing game, 31st, 32nd in passing, do you think he's there still next year?
What's his cap hit?
yeah.
If they make the playoffs,
yeah,
that's a totally different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they have 6 picks in the first 3 rounds,
yeah.
even if he had a great year,
mm-hmm.
Peterman might make this a different story, but it's the 3rd round. It's the 2nd round. You going to take one? Who's going to get mad when you have double the picks?
Right.
You can afford to take more chances. So maybe, you know, Washington took RG3 and Kirk Cousins in the same draft.
Yeah.
We've seen Breeze. I just mentioned Breeze and Rivers. I'm trying to think who was a quarterback when the Steelers took Roethlisberger. Tommy Maddox, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And Maddox had a great year.
Yeah.
They draft their guy. When Aaron Rodgers gets drafted, they had Brett Favre.
Brett Favre, yeah.
So, you know, if you have 6 picks in the first 3 rounds, I think it's worth considering that no matter what, we're going to find one to add to this mix.
Yeah.
All that guy's got to do in their minds is really be better than Nathan Peterman.
Yeah.
Or whichever of the two they don't believe in long term.
Exactly.
And if Yates isn't here, there's no reason not to think you could have Tyrod, first round pick, and Peterman as your 3
mm-hmm.
and say, you know, we've done what we can. Think about the Seahawks. They traded for Charlie Whitehurst. They signed Matt Flynn. Am I right about this?
Yep.
And they drafted Russell Wilson. And then Wilson won the job, and he had it. So I don't think they're blind to Tyrod, is what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha.
You can't be.
No, you can't be blind to him. And
they might, you know, put their money on this might not be our guy
long term,
but you can't be blind to it.
Now, ultimately, we know Tyrod Taylor is the type of guy that needs to have weapons around him. Now, right now on this team – We were just talking about X, Y, and Z, and I know you wanted to get into who would be – if you could put a team of receivers together, who would be perfect X, Y, or perfect X receiver, slot receiver, and Z receiver?
Yeah.
Who do you have?
Go through what they are again. X is the guy that does everything.
X is your number one guy, does everything, can play anywhere.
Antonio Brown, is that Antonio? Is that Sammy? Antonio, is that Julio Jones?
Julio Jones.
That's the answer.
Is an X.
The Y is an outside-ish kind of. No, the Z is the outside guy.
Yeah, he's your number two. He's an outside type of guy. I mean, he can play in the slot as well, though.
Okay. Oh, he plays in the slot as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Trying to think, like, am I putting together the Monstars here of receivers?
Yeah, you're putting
because
like,
I want to have a spot for the jump ball guy. I want to have a spot for Mike Evans.
Okay.
But maybe he's never going to really go in the slot, I don't think. I want Beckham on this team. You know, like, that's what I was trying to get you into is, like,
Beckham.
The receivers can be broken down into certain types, and each guy is asked to do a little bit of a different thing.
Mm-hmm. So if I had to do this, I would go with – because I think Julio Jones is a guy who can play in the slot more than Mike Evans could.
Yeah.
So I would go with Mike Evans at X. I would go with Julio Jones at Z. Then I would go with the guy like Odell who can play everywhere at the H because your H receiver needs to be able to play Z and X, you know, play in the slot primarily. Odell, if you put Odell Beckham in the slot, there's nobody that can run with that guy, you know. So no linebackers, no safeties, no nothing. Nobody can run with him. So I would go with Evans, Julio at the Z, Odell Beckham, or Antonio Brown in the slot.
Who's your favorite guy to watch?
Ooh, my favorite guy, I love to watch Odell play.
Yeah.
I love to watch him play. I mean, as Murph was, you know, he was trying to make little smart comments and stuff. I love to see guys dance. So Odell Beckham.
Me too.
Antonio Brown. I like to see those guys play. Julio Jones, you know, he's fun to watch. A.J. Green is fun to watch. But, I mean, they're big physical dudes. Like, it's kind of boring to me. You know, I like to see Odell and Antonio Brown make plays out there, score and dance.
Sammy is in that receiver class, and, you know, he's about to try and –
That's what's crazy.
Right. And Sammy's out there in L.A., so he gets to make a big impression, and the Rams have already expressed a little bit of interest in extending him. Do you see what Sammy talked about it? There was another guy. It might have been Odell. That receiver class, the money that they're going to command, and the way that football salaries are going to go.
Yeah.
It used to be quarterbacks and then, like, tackles and defensive ends.
Mm-hmm.
But receiver is about to go over all
it
that.
Is.
And
it
could
is.
We see a receiver sign – and make more than all but, like, four quarterbacks? Could a receiver go that high and really change the market? Like, when you talk franchise tags, could a receiver franchise tag eventually climb up to match quarterback franchise tag?
I think there's some very talented receivers in the game. I think the receiver position, because this is a passing game, you have to have guys that can change the game for you. You know, and a guy like Odell is that guy. He's going to command a lot of money. When we're going to talk about quarterback money when Odell Beckham gets his contract. It's going to be ridiculous. And he's going to change the market for everybody else. You know, I mean, Antonio Brown, I think, right now is the highest paid. Odell Beckham's going to be above Antonio Brown. His numbers are going to be around quarterback money. He's not going to go for anything less. And somebody would give him that, you know. Somebody out there is going to give him that. And then you're going to have other guys.
I'm the second best. I'm the second best guy.
Exactly.
I should be right underneath him. It's kind of like what just happened with Connor McDavid in hockey, who just got the biggest salary. He's young.
Mm-hmm.
He's proven he's great. He hasn't won a whole ton yet in terms of team success, but that doesn't matter. Like, he's the best. There's the new bar, and everyone kind of falls in underneath that. And Beckham probably could do the same thing.
Yeah.
Shoot for the moon and set the standard, and wide receiver salaries just go right up underneath it.
We have another call on the line, and this question is about the Bills and the wide receiver position. So we're going to get out to Jim in Lakeview. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I'm glad this topic came up because I think one of the things that the Sammy Watkins trade tells us that hasn't been pointed out is that the Bills front office does not put a huge value on having a stud wide receiver. And the reason I say that is look at their experience in Carolina. In their most successful year, the year they went to the Super Bowl, a year in the regular season they almost went undefeated, they lost Kelvin Benjamin the preseason. And there was a lot of gloom and doom when he went down with injury. and they had a very mediocre receiving core with the team. So look at what the Carolina goes to the Super Bowl. They had a quarterback who was known as much for running as throwing. They had mediocre receivers. They had a strong running game, and they had a McDermott-coached defense. That sounds a lot like what the Buffalo Bills have right now. And I think their experience in being able to go to the Super Bowl and accomplish all this without having a stud receiver weighs into their factoring in saying, well, you know, we don't really need to spend all that money on a wide receiver. We had success without that. And the other thing about that is McDermott and Bean, they both flow from the Andy Reid coaching tree. And Andy Reid, if you look at his history, he very rarely ever drafted a wide receiver in the first round. He just didn't believe in it. So I think a lot of what the Watkins trade says is we're going to put our resources in the front line, the defensive lines, and the wide receiver, based on our past experience, is a luxury, not a necessity.
Thank you, Jim. I think, yeah, this team is used to, and I know we got to get to a break here, like, very soon. And we're going to talk about this on the other side of the break.
I think there's something to be said for this point. Think of if you were to label the top five receivers of the last 20 years, how many of them have Super Bowls?
All right.
Do any of them? I mean, T.O. doesn't.
Right.
Moss doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that they lost because of those guys, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Moss was close. Julio's close. Owens close. They all got to a Super Bowl.
Right.
Harrison would have had one, right, with the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
But the best guys in the game, you know.
All right, well, let's
there's
talk,
something there.
There's definitely something there. So we're going to talk about this on the other side of the break. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
And welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I'm Donald Jones, sitting in with Jeremy White. The team is getting ready for their game. I'm sure they're heading over to the stadium probably soon, if not now, as we speak, down in Philadelphia. The game starts at 7 p.m., big game for a lot of guys. Before we went to a break, you were talking about wide receivers, big-time wide receivers, as the Bills trade away Sammy Watkins, and who was the last big-time wide receiver to win a Super Bowl?
Did you find out?
I have not found out one
yet.
I think
it's Harrison. I'm not trying to say – the caller laid out the idea that maybe Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott don't have a high value on receiver because the best season they had in Carolina was one where Calvin Benjamin got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I would say the counterpoint to that is I bet they wish they had Calvin Benjamin.
Probably.
You're right. Like,
would have made a big difference.
Just because you're without a guy and you win without that guy doesn't mean you wouldn't be better if he was there anyway.
Exactly.
So I don't know. Should the Bills ever spend two first-round picks on a receiver again? I would say probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But try to have the best players at every position that you can. And if you have a truly great quarterback, sure, Tom Brady gets interchangeable parts.
All right.
He also had the best year of his career with Randy Moss.
True.
He gets Edelman. He gets Welker. They've had good receivers there. But for every one of those, I mean, Jim Kelly had Andre Reed. And Peyton Manning had Harrison and Wayne and then Demaryius Thomas. And, you know, sure, a great quarterback can help you get over that stuff. But if you ask the quarterback, he's probably going to say, get me the best guys you can.
Now, do you feel like, because as we got into break, I started to talk about the development of Tyrod Taylor. Now, down in Carolina, they lost Kelvin Benjamin, and Cam Newton had his best season. That was really passing and running. You know, he had a very good season that year, having to distribute the ball to guys like Philly Brown, Jericho Kotry, Ted Ginn, guys that, you know, weren't necessarily household names. Not Kelvin Benjamin, not his size, not his skill set or any of that stuff. Do you feel like not having that guy helps the development of a quarterback that needs to develop more in his passing game, or having a number one guy helps the development?
Good, right?
Yeah.
If all of a sudden they take away the thing that you can do whenever you want, you kind of learn to rely on some other guys and some other things. And if you want Tyrod Taylor to be the best passer possibly could, sure, a great run game can help him have good days, but if they shut down the run, you need to know that he has the ability to overcome that.
Right.
So, yeah, I would think that not having Watkins is not good for Taylor. But I'm sure there are many examples of this where that brings out the very best in a guy, and you find out that he can take it to another level.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's up to the player, it's up to the coach, it's to find out if they can actually get that done.
not having Watkins, I think it can hurt Tyrod Taylor. I also think it can help him because now he does have to get it around. And he still does have guys that are proven in this league, you know. Anquan Boldin's definitely not the same speed, but Anquan Boldin is a guy who will make plays for you. He will fight for any ball. He'll make those plays. Tyrod has that comfort in throwing it to him. Jordan Matthews is another guy who has produced in this league. Still not the same as Sammy Watkins, not the same deep threat, speed-wise, all of that stuff. But he has produced in this league in 3 years. You know, one of five receivers with his types of stats, I think it's like over 65 catches in each season, over 800-plus yards in each season. He's one of five in NFL history, you know. So he has guys to throw it to. Zay Jones, he's a wild card. I mean, we don't know what to expect out of Zay Jones as we get into the season.
Yeah, and the Eagles threw the ball a lot more than the Bills did. It was 240 more attempts last year, mm-hmm. I think is what it came out to. It was five more attempts per game over 3 years. That's what it was. I was trying to do the math to see those. Like when those stats went up for Jordan Matthews against Sammy Watkins, you know, Sammy missed some games. The number of passes you throw would make a difference and would matter as well. Jordan Matthews is the guy that, like, I don't know about you. You play fantasy football?
No, you don't? I don't. I never did it.
Why?
I never had to pay. Because I got to watch now. I got to watch around the league to see who's injured, and I got to think about. I just want to, you know what? I watch games with my son. And
he's going to get into fantasy eventually.
He probably will.
And then you'll join?
Maybe.
Okay.
But right now, you know, he's turning seven. We like to enjoy just watching the game. You know, he's running back and forth, throwing the football up and down. And I enjoy that with him. If I have a fantasy football team, now I'm actually paying attention, and I'm not enjoying him. And I love my time with my son.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, Jordan Matthews is the receiver who is never on my team, who always scores points against me.
Right.
Like I'm serious. There are guys around the league that do this. And last year, playing fantasy, like, you know, you get to know players that maybe you don't know. And that, I think receiver might be one of the best spots for this.
Yeah.
Because you go 3 and 4 down the depth chart, and you know, like, hey, Michael Crabtree actually is kind of good. He put up some decent numbers in San Francisco, and even though it's a bad team, I think he's kind of good. Last year, I set out my only mission playing fantasy football was I'm getting Julio Jones because every single time I would ever talk about receivers, I would always forget to mention him.
Wow.
So I said, no more.
Like, yep.
I'm going to have him on my fantasy team, and I'm never going to forget about him ever again.
Right.
And I watched him every week because of that, every week that I could. And, of course, he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's never under my radar ever again. Not that he ever should have been, you know, but I was focusing on other guys. So Jordan Matthews, he's that guy that's never on my team. Maybe I'll draft him this year just to make sure I know what he's doing.
Now,
then again, he's on the Bills, so I don't really have to.
That was last year's team. Did you already do your fantasy draft?
No, my fantasy draft, what's today? Today's the 17th. I've got 12 days.
12 days. Now, do you guys go somewhere, meet up?
We will, yeah.
I remember we played the Vikings 1 year in the preseason out in Minnesota. I scored. This might have been my second or last year here in Buffalo. We're out in Minnesota. We fly out there, get there, and we're all hungry, so we go to get something to eat at some steakhouse downtown Minnesota. Minnesota's a beautiful city in the summertime. Just the summertime.
Yeah.
Everything else is like, oof. But
it's kind of like here. They probably get a bunch of crap for it snowing and being cold.
But it's colder there.
It's a lot colder there.
Than here in the wintertime. It is crazy cold up there. But we go into this restaurant, and there's all of these people in there, and they're screaming and all of this stuff. And I'm looking like, what is going on in here? And it was a fantasy football draft. So do you guys meet up somewhere and do it?
Yeah.
Do you have, like, the same place every
No, time? We actually, you know, we accepted bids from a couple different places. No, we'll just get together.
We all accepted bids.
It's tough enough to get 10 people or 12 people, however many you have, into one spot on the same day. I mean, people are busy. They have kids. They have, you know, lives and jobs. So we'll all get together. And last year was my first year ever doing an auction draft, which, I mean, everybody's done those for years. I never had. And I'll never go back.
Right.
It's the best kind.
Do you only play fantasy football, or do you play baseball, hockey? Basketball?
I only play fantasy football.
Do they have fantasy hockey?
They have fantasy hockey. They have fantasy golf. There's fantasy NASCAR. There's fantasy everything.
Man, that's amazing.
There's you can play The Bachelor, that television show, The Bachelor. Well, you can get in a fantasy league for that.
That's crazy. Now, here's my thing with fantasy, because I feel like it changes the way people actually root for games.
It definitely does. It changes a lot.
It does.
Like, it changes a lot.
You're a Bills fan, but you have Tom Brady as your fantasy quarterback. Or you have Gronk as your, you know, as a tight end. And so it's like, I don't know how to root for this. I want Gronk to get me some points.
Yeah.
But I want us to win.
You know, you just kind of get used to it. You say, listen, if they lose today, I just want Gronk to score the touchdowns instead. Right. You just, and it's only twice a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people just won't play any players that play against the Bills. Mm-hmm. Some people will draft a lot of, you know, a lot of Bills on their roster. It's I think in this here, you, Murph, Andrew, Craig, get a couple people in here.
Yeah.
And then you guys could have a segment where you could talk trash, you could play highlights of your guys who scored touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. We could do that.
Just saying.
Maybe we should do that. We used to talk to Murph about that.
I used to be against it, but I was kind of fake against it. It's great. I can't wait. The draft is the most fun day, I'm excited for the draft. So
now, who's your number one pick?
Well, it's an auction draft, so
Yeah. So if it wasn't an auction draft, who would you say sure number one pick?
You know, what I might do. There are a couple different strategies. Back when Gronk was healthy, a buddy of mine drafted Gronk first overall because he's so far ahead of all the other tight ends. That he was thinking, I'll win that position every week. I might go into this year, honestly, and it's an auction draft, so in an auction, you can get whoever you want. You just have to pay for him.
Right.
I might go into the year 100% focused on getting Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham.
Just because I want him on my team. He's fun, and he's going to score, and he has games with, you know, 200 yards and 3 touchdowns, and he's unstoppable at times, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that, with just identifying a guy and saying, you know what, I want to root for you this year, so you're on my team.
On this team, I guess the only one you could say sure bet is Shady.
McCoy would be a great pick.
Great pick. How high does he go?
He'll go first round, I don't know. It depends on how many people, first, second round, maybe second round. If it's an auction draft, it's all about however much people are willing to pay, but – you know, if you're in a league that values receptions, and he's going to catch the ball a lot in this offense, I think.
He will, yeah.
And he'll be relied upon. And, I mean, I don't know how many carries Jonathan Williams is going to get. Are they going to split it like they did with Gillislee? Oh. Or are they going to lean more heavily on McCoy?
That's tough to say.
Yeah.
That's tough to say. McCoy getting older? I mean, I know he doesn't take a lot of hits, but he is 29 years old. You know, he's played in this league for some years.
Maybe he's –
so you need to keep him healthy. You want him to play. You got to give him the ball, but you got to still keep him healthy.
He's destined to be like Anquan Boldin, though.
I think –
play till he's 38, maybe. Anquan's 38. Was he 36?
Yeah, I think he's 37. 37. Yeah, he's 36, turning 37 in October. Okay. Shady, though, you can get him the ball without just handing it off to him. You know, like you can line him up in the slot, like we were talking about. Line him up outside where he might not be taking those pounding just hits because you're only handing him. Jonathan Williams, you're going to hand him the ball. You know, he's going to line up. He might catch one or two out of the backfield, but for the most part, you are handing him the ball. Shady is totally different. So Shady might go high in people's drafts. I like your pick, though, Odell.
If you're not going to have a fun player, why play?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the same – I did it 1 year with T.O. Just I want him on my team. I want fun players. Yeah. It's not just about, you know, points. It's about who do I want to watch this week. Mm-hmm. Matthew Stafford, I mentioned it to you. He's one of my favorite players to watch. Just he just the way – how many comebacks they have last year in the fourth quarter? Like 7?
Mm-hmm.
You turn on a Lions game late, and you're like, strap in because it's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
They're not just going to, you know, run out of time. They're going to either win this game or he's going to throw a spectacular interception. Like,
all right.
That guy's exciting to me.
There are players out there, guys like Aaron Rodgers, I think. You know, he's fun to watch. He makes crazy plays, and he's probably high on people's lists in terms of
David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell. These are guys at the top this year. Zeke, I mean, the suspension for him is
that hurts.
From a fantasy standpoint, strictly fantasy. That's what we're talking here. You know,
and we didn't still got to draft them, though.
Yeah, and we didn't get to that, the NFLPA thing about Lorenzo
Alexander.
So
we're going to do that. We're going to go to a break right here so we have enough time to talk about that. Going to get to a break. On the other side of this thing, we're going to talk about the NFLPA relationship, where that's going, and then we're going to wrap this thing up, and hopefully everybody's ready for the game. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. I'm Donald Jones, sitting in with Jeremy White. The team is down in Philadelphia, getting ready for the game. There's a lot to look forward to this game. You said you're going to watch the game tonight. You want to see Nathan Peterman?
Peterman, yeah.
I want to see Peterman as well. I want to see Jonathan Williams because I don't know if he truly has a number 2 spot yet. You know, does he need to have another good game before they say, all right, this guy is our number 2 running back? Who knows? We'll see about that. Yesterday, the NFL and the NFLPA both released statements. Now, I'm not going to read the statements because they're too long. There's some big words. I read them yesterday. I was like, I'm not doing it again. The guys over there laughed at me. But they both released statements. Lorenzo Alexander was on Pro Football Talk,
Pro Football Talk, I believe. Yeah,
he did an interview on Pro Football Talk where he got into it. What do you think right now about the NFL and the NFLPA's relationship? Now, Lorenzo, his statement is it's really appalling. We're about representing our players at the end of the day and making sure they're getting a fair and just trial whenever they're going through anything with management. You can have two players do the exact same thing, get two different punishments. And that's my whole thing, you know, because it's like they're still not consistent with this thing. You still have some guys that will get two games for something, other guys that will get six games for something, you know, and it's wrong. So what do you think about the NFLPA and the NFL?
I think this is another symptom, another side effect of the players resenting the fact that Roger Goodell is judge and jury, mm-hmm. and he just decides on the punishments.
Right.
And when they try to set parameters, and then there's appeals. You know, are there players that are going to deserve punishments? Yes. I can understand from a player's standpoint if – legally, there's no case brought, but there is beyond a reasonable doubt. There's preponderance of evidence. There's, you know, like the different things that are required for convictions on different levels of law. Think about the Tom Brady thing. Why was he suspended? Because it was more likely than not that they did something wrong.
Right.
Like that doesn't get you convicted of a crime in the justice system,
exactly,
where it's not supposed to. So it's a. It's the latest chapter in an ongoing story of players against Goodell.
Yeah, it's an ongoing story. We'll see what happens in the CBA. I don't think it's going to change because ultimately they want money. The game tonight, Philadelphia, Buffalo Bills, 7 p.m. We'd like to thank production assistants J.J. Torito, George Blash, Jeff Koltenak, Thomas Hollander, our producer Jay Harris, our producers over at GR. Thank you, everyone. Brayton Wilson. It's the Buffalo Bills show on Buffalo Bills.
We'll talk tomorrow.
Yeah.